This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morning, everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. One of the great treats about being able to do this for a living is almost on a daily basis, you get to talk with people who are pretty interesting. On a regular basis, you get the opportunity to talk with people that you really admire. And as a radio junkie and a radio fan myself, you get to actually have conversations with and maybe even meet folks that you have always really enjoyed listening to on the radio. And that is precisely my privilege for the next couple of hours. And I will tell you, this is not a program that is without risk. Just as Ron Karkovice would not invite Ted Williams to take batting practice with him. Just as Jordan Belfort wouldn't invite Warren Buffett to his investor club. Just as Pope Francis probably wouldn't invite Jimmy Swaggart to a Bible meeting. Or Mary Kay Letourneau comparing notes with Stephen Hawking on how to teach people. It is really a tremendous risk on my part to welcome somebody who is so much better at this craft than I am. However, I am beyond thrilled to welcome a master of the art of overnight radio, somebody who I have listened to for many years, somebody who I miss hearing on the radio, someone who has worn many hats, writer, television producer, radio talk show host, newspaper columnist, one of the most sought after MCs and raconteurs in the country. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome the one and only Doug McIntyre. Doug, it is great to see you.
Frank, with that introduction, there is only one thing I can do, and that is die a horrible death on the air with you tonight. There is no way I, A, deserve that introduction, and B, could live up to that introduction.
That is absolutely not true. But the fact of the matter is there are three types of people listening to us right now. There is, I would venture to say, the bulk of the audience who are familiar with you from your time here at WABC and at other radio stations and miss you on the air and loved hearing you, especially in this time slot. There's people that tuned in specifically because you're going to be on the radio now, and they've missed you as much as I have. And then there's a sliver of the audience who may not be familiar with you and may not remember you from your time on the radio. You have led and are in the process of leading one of the most colorful and interesting lives of anybody that's ever done this. You were a television producer, writing for shows like Full House, Married with Children. And then the last time we spoke back in October, and you were kind enough to join us on the first week that we did this show, you talked a little bit about how a guest appearance that you did on the overnight show on KABC led to your career in radio. For the uninitiated, for people that didn't hear that conversation, briefly explain how you made that transition from writer to radio talk show host.
Well, like you, I was a radio junkie as a kid. My mother and father out on the island, they couldn't understand, why is that kid going through 9-volt batteries? Because I was always slipping a transistor radio under the pillow. But my radio god was Gene Shepard on WOR, if you're old enough. And those of you who aren't, you've seen the movie Christmas Story. Well, Gene wrote the movie, and that's his voice narrating it. And those that movie started all as stories that he ad-libbed on the air back in the day. And so radio was an early passion. But, you know, things drifted on. You go through puberty and you have other interests and you get distracted by things. And I fell into the television business for a long time. But and along that path, I became a nut about the Wright brothers. I wanted to write a movie about the Wright brothers, and I did all kinds of research about the Wright brothers to the point where all my friends would avoid, if they saw a plane in the sky, they'd run from if I was in the neighborhood because I started blabbing about the Wright brothers. And I ended up writing a piece that was on American History Illustrated on the cover. And the overnight guy at KBC in Los Angeles at the time, Ray Brame, who actually was part of ABC syndication, used to be on WABC way back in the early 70s.
So when WABC first became a talk station back in 1982, they didn't actually have any programming. They just basically simulcast whatever was on KABC.
That's correct.
So some of the audience may remember Ray Brame if they're old enough.
Well, yeah, and that's going way back, though. And that's kind of a, like a reverse, because now most syndication comes from New York and goes across the country. And that was one of the few eras in radio when a lot of the programming started in L.A. and came east. But anyway, Ray was a pilot. He invited me to come on to talk about the rights. And I did for like 4 hours. It was insane. And as I was driving home, I thought, that is the greatest job in the world. You can sit there from midnight to 5 in the morning and prattle on about obscure crap and just go into all kinds of wormholes. And a couple years later, I had the job. I had that exact same job, like most people in radio, unlike yourself, you know, start in, you know, Yuma, Arizona, and right. They bounce around as radio gypsies. And I just got this incredible lucky break where my first radio station was in Los Angeles, and then my second one was in New York.
So you mentioned Gene Shepard, who certainly, if people aren't familiar with him, they know him from A Christmas Story, and you could still go on the YouTube and see his masterful storytelling abilities. I saw a lot of similarities between your ability to tell a story, particularly doing a retrospective or talking about your personal life, and Gene Shepard. Was that an intentional effort on your part to emulate Gene Shepard, or was that just a function of you having listened to him so much?
Well, I think that anybody who does anything, and I mean certainly in the arts, every painter has studied the masters and learned what they do, and singers copy singers who come before them, and then they put their own stamp on it. And I think that's probably true for carpenters. Carpenters, a great, you know, woodworker is looking at, you know, how was furniture made in the 1500s. And then they, you know, they work off of these things. So whether it was intentional or by osmosis, I learned a few things from him. But what Gene did was really kind of unprecedented. You know, if he were alive today, he'd be a podcaster because no station would put him on the air because it was an odd show. It was a 45-minute show. It was 45 minutes a night. And then on Saturdays, he did a two-hour live show from the Limelight down in the Village with an audience. But the great show for all those years was him coming in, and for 45 minutes, he just told a story. There were no calls. There were no guests ever. And he just told, and it was basically he was composing short fiction on the air in real time, and apparently drove everybody crazy around him because he would practice it all day long. He would corner people at the radio station and pin them up against the file cabinets and start talking their ears off. But he was trying to find what worked, and then at night he would sit behind a microphone and do his thing. So I certainly absorbed some of what he did. Through osmosis. I don't know that it was a deliberate because, you know, talk radio evolved, too. I mean, we're dealing with news stories and headlines and breaking news and things like that. And he rarely touched on that. He mostly would talk about, in an odd way, you know, Jerry Seinfeld said that his entire comic sensibility was shaped by Gene Shepard.
Really? I didn't know that.
Because Shep would talk about, well, I'll give you an example of it, like this to me is something that I've been thinking a lot about, and it kind of would be the thing that Shepard would talk about. Do you realize, I just flew in from LA on Monday, and you realize that until 1972, there were no wheels on luggage. The first guy who got a patent to put wheels on suitcases is a guy named Bernie Sandow, and he owned a luggage company, and he couldn't sell it. He finally got some buyer at Macy's to say okay, and they started selling suitcases with wheels on them in 1972. Now think about this. You go watch any movie, go back to the beginning of motion pictures and the, you know, the teens and the silent pictures all the way into the 60s and early 70s. And every time somebody's getting on a plane, climbing on a bus, getting on a steamship.
Right, they're lugging this luggage.
Giant steamer trunks.
Right.
And the crazy thing is,
you know, you watch them put them on these big carts with wheels. The porters and the stevedores are pushing them. Stewards are pushing them along the docks. And nobody, not one person from Og the Caveman discovering he had opposable thumbs until the Nixon-McGovern campaign in 72 ever thought, why don't we put wheels on these things?
So then that's the kind of thing that Shep would talk about.
Yeah, but then, you know, his style was to have – he would have – some little thread that he would throw out, and then he would kind of fake his way. He had to do the commercials at 15 minutes into the show. So once he got past the commercials, then he had 30 minutes to go back to that thread and get to the end of the story as the closing theme was playing. And it was always kind of like the guy who used to be in the Ed Sullivan Show on spin plates on sticks. Is he going to make it? You know, you'd hear the music and say, he's so far away from – there's no finish. And somehow he would miraculously cross the wire.
Did you ever get to meet Gene Shepard?
No.
Never got to meet him? No.
I never met him. I did as a total fanboy. His last book that he wrote called A Fistful of Fig Newtons. He was living in Florida, and I managed to get an address. I sent it to his publisher, and he signed it for me, so I have that. But one of his wives, Lois Nettleton, who was a great actress, she had dated Frank Sinatra. She had quite a life. She died a few years ago. She met Gene as a listener. She was a listener to the show, and she ended up married to him for 10 years. And she used to listen to my overnight show in Los Angeles because she was bi-coastal. She had a place in Manhattan and she had a place in Hollywood. And she started writing me letters. And she wrote a letter not long before she died saying, you remind me so much of Gene. And she signed it, Lois Nettleton, Mrs. Gene Shepard. And I have that on the wall.
Oh, that's
I
want
right under glass. It's on the wall.
You know, it's funny. I read but maybe 8 or 9 years ago, a biography of Gene Shepard,
yeah.
Which had a lot of insight.
Bergman. Yeah.
Right. That's right. I interviewed Eugene Bergman about it. And, I've gotten to know a lot of people that work with Gene, Barry Farber, Joe Franklin, John R. Gambling, and they all have interesting Gene Shepard stories. And I'm sorry, I never got to know him either. Never got to interview him. But and I want to ask you a little bit more about the state of the radio business these days, and radio as a means of communication. But just going back to your television career, you wrote on a lot of very successful shows, a lot of very well-known shows, and some not-so-well-known shows as well.
Very kind of you to describe them as not-so-well-known. Well, I worked on shows that were so horrible they should have been canceled at the first commercial break. I worked on Roxy on CBS with Andrea Martin. And this show, I mean, the Zapruder film was funnier. I mean, it was absolutely it's unwatchable.
One bad show, I think, is worth is better than having written zero television shows. But you worked on Full House, which obviously a lot of people remember, and they brought it back recently on Netflix. John Stamos, Bob Saget, the Olsen twins, the whole nine yards. And that, which is a very kind of a wholesome sitcom. And then you also wrote for a show that was very edgy for its time, a little raunchy for its time, a show like Married with Children.
I can't believe you burned down Mom's couch.
Yeah, well, I can't believe you bought that stupid Concern for Illiteracy crap. I mean, if you had doubted me the way that you're supposed to, this never would have happened.
Nice try, Pyronymph.
Bud, you've got to help me.
Oh, well, sure. If you don't mind living a life of servitude and degradation, I hear Saudi Arabia needs blondes.
I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for Mom. I mean, this count is her life. She can't go on without it. But if she finds out about this, it could kill her.
Kelly, don't you think you're exaggerating just a little?
Hello? Is my couch okay?
Now, I was a big fan of Married with Children. I think that was actually an episode that you wrote. What's it like going from working on a show where you have to kind of write for, I don't know, 9 and 10-year-old viewers versus a show like Married with Children where you're writing for 25 and 30-year-olds? Is that difficult for you as a writer? Is it difficult or is it, I don't know, is that just part of the job?
Well, it's definitely part of the job. You got to write to the job. It's like people who write for stand-up comics.
you have to tap into the personality of the performer. With Full House, I worked with one of the great joke writers of his generation, Lenny Rips, a brilliant punchline guy. And, you know, Full House didn't use a lot of hard jokes. In some ways, he was wasted on the show. But he was funny in the room. And most of the room was hilarious because it was mostly absolutely obscene, horrific violence pitched about the various cast members that could never make it on the air. But the edge was really worse on the children's show than it was on a show like Married with Children. I actually worked on a show on Showtime called Sherman Oaks, which had a boutique audience that was infinitely worse than Married with Children in terms of patent obscenity. But all the shows, when you're a staff writer on a series, your job is to imitate basically what has come before you, because if the show, unless you're there at the very beginning and you're the show creator and you're getting hired on season 3 or something, season 12 or whatever it is of these big hit shows, there's already established characters, established speech patterns, established joke rhythms, etc. So your job is to make sure that you're replicating that. Otherwise, it's like the script comes in and it's like from a different show. So there's a certain amount of being almost an impressionist when you're working on a series like that, especially in the later seasons. I think with Married with Children, we did season 6. And with Full House, I was there pretty early in season 3 and 4.
Did you have a preference of those two shows just because they're so well known, of which show you had a better experience on as a writer?
Well, I was at Full House longer, and both of those shows, of course, were, you know, the thing is, Married with Children was funnier, was more to my sensibility, but Full House is an astonishing money machine. Mm. It's one of the most successful shows, and I've talked to Jeff Franklin, who's the creator of the series. I had lunch with him a couple years ago and said, could you have imagined, because I certainly couldn't, 25, 30 years ago when we were doing this, this thing would still be watched all over the world.
It's absolutely
stunning.
Remarkable.
Now, we didn't think it would last the season.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Really? Wow. You also wrote on the television version of A League of Their Own.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the film A League of Their Own with Tom Hanks and Gina Davis and Madonna, Rosie O'Donnell. I didn't even know that was a television show.
Well, this is a strange story because they did a TV version. And the guys who wrote the movie, Lowell Gans and Bob Mandel, were brilliant. They wrote Splash, you know, Parenthood, so many hit movies. And they wrote A League of Their Own. So they were going to do a series. And they had the show was unproducible because you had to shoot the baseball sequences. As you remember the movie, it's set in the 1940s during World War II. Girls baseball. Well, we shot it down in Ontario, California, in Orange County, with extras in the audience dressed in 1940s costumes. And if you found out on the Wednesday run through that you needed to change the scene, you couldn't go reshoot anything because you were already wrapped down there and you couldn't bring all the extras back and all the costumes. So it was really a difficult show to produce. I wrote one that Tom Hanks directed. And this is kind of a famous story.
Was it one season, the show?
Oh, it was like 8 episodes, okay. And then they came and got us. But I wrote this thing. It was sort of a parody of the I'm the Luckiest Man in the World speech, the Lou Gehrig speech, where Dottie Henson, who's Gina Davis in the movie, Jimmy Dugan, who was played by Sam McMurray in the TV series and Hanks in the movie, wins a monkey in a card game, and they make it the mascot for the team. And the girls hate it because it's grabbing them in the shower, and it smells bad, and smells worse than Jimmy Dugan. And Dottie hits a ball, pulls a ball down the third baseline, and kills the monkey. It hits the monkey in the head and kills it. And so they wanted to do this immediately. Lowell says, "We're killing the monkey." So I didn't even pitch Act Two. So we write the thing, and Hanks was directing. And the production fell the week of the Academy Awards, and he was presenting that year. So we had to shut down for a day so we can go do the Oscars. And he comes back, and he says, you know, I was in the green room at the Academy, and Fellini was there. Federico Fellini, the great Italian director, was there. And he asked me what I was doing. I said, you know, I'm directing. I'm directing like – and he said, what are you directing? So I told him. And I told him, you know, the ball hits the monkey, it kills the monkey. And he says, well, you can't kill the monkey. the people will hate you. They'll love the monkey. You can't kill the monkey. So the show got rewritten to be a show about a cute little monkey that gets injured. And I realized Fellini screwed up my show. I don't go around screwing up his movies. Get your hands off my stupid sitcom.
Joined in studio by the great Doug McIntyre. You may remember him from his time here at WABC as the host in this time slot of Red Eye Radio. We'll take your calls over the course of the next 90 minutes. If you want to give us a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We're covering anything and everything. Doug, I do want to ask you a little bit about music. Not only would I hear your bumper music on the radio that you would play and be just opened to a whole new world, maybe a new artist that I hadn't heard, maybe a new song from an existing artist, but I would hear the stories that you'd tell about people like Tommy Dorsey and Frank Sinatra and the big band era. And it's pretty clear that you have a great passion for music. Tell me about your relationship with music. Were you ever a musician yourself
fan? I can't play anything. To me, I can't whistle. I couldn't find middle C on the piano if you took my hand and pushed it onto the keys. So somebody's got to be the audience, and that's me. And one of the things I realized doing overnight radio that you have also realized is that nobody from management is listening. They're all asleep in their beds. And as long as you don't drop an F-bomb or insult a sponsor, you can pretty much do whatever you want. These guys are laughing because they know it's true.
Well, I will tell you, at this show and this station is a notable exception because our owner is completely nocturnal. And just
that
when
is the most dangerous thing I've ever heard on radio.
Just when I am sure that he's not listening, he'll email me or text and say, just so you know, I'm listening.
Well, in Los Angeles, they went to bed early, much to my delight. So I just started playing the music that I liked. And as it turns out, because every radio station in the country is playing the same hard rock bumps back in. And I like jazz and I like the songbook. And to me, there's only two kinds of music, good music and bad music. And an old song is a new song if you've never heard it before. And a new song is an old song if they played it 7,000 times and everybody's sick of it. So I just started playing the stuff I liked, and then I got a piano in the studio, and then on Friday nights for the first hour, I'd have musicians come in studio, and we'd have jam sessions for the first hour live, and it was fantastic, and we had some amazing people. We had Keeley Smith in studio and the legendary Artie Shaw at 90. You know, it was one of the great stars. It was just like the Rolling Stones to Benny Goodman's Beatles in the 40s, the 30s and 40s, a major star. So the stories are great. And then just really interesting people. One of my favorite guys ever was Lamont Dozier of Holland, Taylor & Dozier, who did all of the Motown hits. And Lamont came in and he told these fantastic stories about recording all those Motown hits and how they did it. They had a Pontiac or an Oldsmobile on cinder blocks behind the studio in Motown, with cables running out, speaker wires running out to the car radio. And they did the final mix of all those Motown records sitting. They'd all get in the car that didn't run. And they turned the radio on, and it was hooked to a battery. And they'd blow the horn twice for more bass or three times for more treble. And the guys in the studio would hear that and fix the levels. And the reason they did that was they knew all those records at Motown were going to be heard on the radio, AM radio, through a metal dashboard in a car. So they wanted to hear not what it sounds like in a studio speaker. They wanted to hear what it's like coming through the car speakers. And back then in the 1960s and 70s, it was a metal dashboard. There were no Blancpain or however you say that. There were no fancy speaker systems. It was just a 4-inch speaker coming through the metal dashboard, and that's how they made the records.
Well, that's pretty neat, and I always got a big kick out of hearing exactly these stories and hearing a lot of the artists that you would play. We're going to continue with Doug McIntyre. If you want to give us a call, 1-800-848-WABC. We'll chat with Doug a little bit about what he's doing now, a little bit about current events, find out what's happening in California. 1-800-848-9222. Doug is a very smart guy. You know who else is a smart guy? Bernard McGuirk. And he proves it just about every day in the Peerless Boilers Beat Bernie contest. Now, if you want to actually win some neat stuff, in this case, it's going to be a $100 gift card, you can play against the self-proclaimed smartest man in New York City, Bernie McGurk, and you get not only a chance to win a $100 gift card, but you get a chance to win an exclusive WABC and Barry House coffee mug. That's all brought to you by Peerless Boilers and Pavilion Tankless Water Heaters. Go to peerlessboilers.com or paviliontankless.com for a dealer near you. Peerless Boilers, they claim to be, and I think this with some pretty good reason, America's best built boilers. Now, a little bit later, I'm going to ask Doug what he misses, if anything, about being on radio. I'll tell you what I'd miss about being on radio is that once in a while, our advertisers will give me free stuff. And one of the products that I have really enjoyed is Life Change Tea. This is a phenomenal product that I never would have known about had I not been on the radio. And it basically, it's a cold tea that gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. It tastes great. There's no fillers, no GMOs. It's completely organic. And it's a mild cleanse. It's a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. The combination of the energy and the cleansing, let's say, is part of what gives it its slogan, the tea that makes you go. If you want to try this stuff, I do recommend it. You can go to the website getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And if you do decide to order it, and you've used the promo code Frank, you'll get to enjoy some free shipping. So if you want a tea that's a cold tea, a refreshing tea, a pretty good tasting tea, you can go to the website getthetea.com. And if you use the promo code Frank, you'll get to enjoy free shipping. We'll continue with Doug McIntyre next.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
The great Johnny Mathis with Gordon Goodwin, Let the Good Times Roll. Frank Moreno here with Doug McIntyre. It's funny, Doug, back in November, you had called me and said, do you mind if I give you a couple of bumper music suggestions? I said, are you kidding? That's like Johnny Carson offering to write jokes for David Letterman. Are you kidding? I mean, what do I have to do in order to get this? And that was one of your selections. So thank you for your bumper music guidance.
Yeah, Gordon Goodwin's Big Fat Band is one of the most exciting bands out there. They play all over the world. It's all the First Call studio guys who play on every record, the Wayne Bergerons, who's one of the monster on trumpet. And that was a cut that they did a couple years ago with Mathis. And, you know, Johnny's in his 80s now, and he sounds fantastic on that record.
He sounds terrific. And yeah. I know Gordon Goodwin, they used to do your theme song on radio.
Yeah, I used to use him all the time. He's a great writer. He's a great musician.
What are you doing here in New York?
I came back for my sister's 75th birthday.
You do not have a sister that's 75.
Well, I might hear from her tomorrow about that number. But I'm just saying that I did come back. She was having a big birthday, so I thought I'd come back and surprise her. And, you know, you're only 75 once or twice. So
we were talking about music earlier, and if you want to chat with Doug McIntyre.
We just lost a listener in Brewster, by the way.
We were talking about music earlier. If you want to talk with Doug McIntyre, give us a call, 1-800-848-9222. In addition to your radio work, in addition to your work as a columnist with the LA Daily News, in addition to everything else you've done and are doing, you produced a documentary about the great Jack Sheldon, who I first got to know as the voice from I'm Just a Bill, but he has a career far, far beyond that, called Trying to Get Good. Here's a little bit of the trailer from Trying to Get Good.
Hey, really jumping. Come on, cats, check your hats. I mean, this joint is jumping.
To play that brilliantly and to have that comedic sense that he has. This is a heck of a guy, man.
He understands the show business of it all.
So when Bob Doro asked me to contribute to the Schoolhouse Rock thing, it's got to be Sheldon. It's got to be Jack Sheldon.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill.
You know, I think of Jack as kind of a jazz mystic.
And the notes, he just pulls the notes to him and swims right through them with ease.
I've never seen such a tragic life for a guy that walks onto a stage and just buries the audience in laughter.
And I loved cocaine. I love to have cocaine. I got the best cocaine, too. Pharmaceutical cocaine, you take one sniff of it and you see a flock of geese flying through the room. You never quite catch it. When I was Caesar's Palace, I called the room clerk and said, there's a flock of geese in my room. She said, you got any left?
This guy is one of the all-time characters and a great trumpet player.
Yes, Johnny's jumping is really jumping. We're all pumped when the wagon comes. I'm really Johnny jumping.
So some of the voices that you people heard there, Billy Crystal, Dom DeLuise, Clint Eastwood, what a remarkable project that you get to meet so many interesting people covering a subject that you're interested in. How did that documentary come to be? What sparked your interest in Jack Sheldon?
Well, Jack is, we lost him a couple of years ago, but he had one of the most amazing careers. Because he was everywhere. He was sort of like Zelig. He showed up at so many places. He was playing, for instance, at the Ambassador Hotel the night Bobby Kennedy was killed at the Kennedy event. And he was an everyman. He met Yasser Arafat when he was with Benny Goodman in Paris. He was all over the world. He was one of the great trumpet players who ever lived. But he also happened to be wickedly funny. He worked with Lenny Bruce for 6 years, and I'm not sure who was dirtier. In fact, while I didn't know you were going to play that clip, and I was trying to think while I was playing, what joke of Jack's can I tell without losing our broadcast license? And there's not many. But he was this wonderful triple threat. A lot of people know him from Schoolhouse Rock, from Conjunction Junction, I'm Just a Bill, etc. But he was a wonderful singer, a distinctive, unique voice, and he had his own sitcom in the 60s. He was a star of a series called Run, Buddy, Run in the 60s, and Billy Crystal loved it. It was done by the same guys who did Get Smart.
Oh, really?
The same producers. And for years he was on the Merv Griffin Show as the sort of the jester from the band on the Merv Griffin Show. But he did all these things, and yet so many people say, I don't know, the name doesn't ring a bell. But, you know, in terms of musicians, he was a god to musicians. He was a first call trumpet soloist. He and Harry Sweets Edison, who was with Count Basie and did all the Sinatra records, Jack Sheldon and Peggy Lee and Tom Waits and, you know, everybody, basically. He played on so many records and many records of his own. So he was this fascinating character. And my wife and Penny Pizer and I, we saw him at some jazz festival, and we had known him. I had him up on my camera when I produced that series. We did a two-part murder in a jazz club just so we could have him hanging around and playing. And as we were driving home from that particularly terrific performance, we said, somebody really should capture this before we don't have it anymore. And we decided, well, we'll do it. So she bought a camera, and we made the movie over a course of years. And it still sells. I mean, it's amazing. It's on Vimeo. You can download it either as a rental or a video, or you can buy it. You can buy it at Amazon.com, Trying to Get Good, The Jazz Odyssey of Jack Sheldon, in fantastic 4:3 aspect ratio, non-HD DVD.
So folks can search Trying to Get Good at Amazon.
Absolutely.
They can buy
it. And while you're there, as long as you're there, you know, we made this whole other documentary. Penny really did it.
Penny's your wife, Penny Pizer.
Yeah, called Still Point, which is a completely different vibe. It's this really interesting story. Her sister, who suffers from MS, lived for 10 years at this Zen community up in the mountains of Northern California, and Penny kind of was the fly in the wall as she recorded this whole other life that's so foreign. I couldn't last 5 minutes there just because they only eat vegetables.
Oh, boy.
So I wouldn't last. You wouldn't either.
No,
would you?
Probably
no,
not.
No, I could tell.
There's no cheese.
There's no guy working overnight radio who eats vegetables. In the history of broadcast, I think Marconi wouldn't eat the broccoli. But but it's this very, very interesting world. And that's also, I'd like to point out, on Vimeo and at Amazon.com.
Still Point is the film. 800-848-9222. Doug McIntyre, my guest in studio, a real treat for me. Let me say hello to Michael in the Upper East Side. Hello, Michael.
Oh, my God. Doug McIntyre, what were the years when I used to listen to you? When were you exactly on the radio?
Well, when we were doing the overnight show nationally,
yeah,
that would be what, 20
WABC,
2010, maybe 2010. I you know, the years are really difficult. I can remember 1492, but that's, other than that, I don't know the years.
But how many years were you on WABC?
Well, we did the national show for 2 years, and then I came back and I did that afternoon show for another year.
Oh.
So I guess it
I only know you from the night.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's 2 years, but it seemed like 4 years.
Thank you, Michael. 800-848-WABC. Jeff is in West Islip. Hello, Jeff.
How you doing, Frank?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
I really miss Mr. Red Eye there. I cut my teeth on Midnight Radio with him when I got switched to night shift.
Now, do you still have your teeth?
Some of them.
All right, well, that's good. Then you're ahead of the game. You don't play hockey then.
No, I did play hockey.
You did? And you still have your teeth?
Yeah.
Are you Wayne Gretzky? Because he's the only hockey player I know. He's too fast. They couldn't catch him to knock his teeth out.
Can I tell you something? When I played high school hockey, everybody was a football player. I scored 60 goals in a 20-game season.
That's a lot of goals. You know, I went to St. Mary's in Manhasset, and when I was there, St. Mary's was like a hockey powerhouse. They beat St. John's.
We used to kick their butt. We used to come over from New Hyde Park, and we used to kick their butt.
Oh, you used to kick their butt, huh? All right, let's throw it down. I'm going to get that jersey over your head.
I just want to say I miss Mr. McIntyre immensely.
Hey, same here.
Thanks.
So do I, Jeff. Thank you.
It's very sweet to hear from you, Jeff.
800-848-9222. When
the guy called in and all of a sudden he's kicking ass.
Exactly. We don't mess around here. You know what New York overnights are like. When we come back.
I got to tell you quick. I'll tell this very quick. My brother Jeff, who died a few years back, he called me one time. He called me from the subway. And he says, this is what just happened. I'm at the 50th Street subway platform, and I realized I left my watch home. So I asked the guy standing next to me what time it was, and he says to me, it's time for you to buy a watch. And he says, I just met the guy who literally wouldn't give you the time of day.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. Frank Morano here with Doug McIntyre. We'll take your calls next. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Pace the floor, stop and stare. I drink a cup of coffee, start to pulling out my hair. I drink 40 cups of coffee. 40 cups of coffee. 40 cups of coffee waiting for you to come home.
Bill Haley singing about 40 cups of coffee. I'm only on cup two in my James Garfield coffee mug. My guest for the hour or two is Doug McIntyre. Doug was kind enough to promote his appearance on Facebook, and there was a whole lot of interest from people in the Facebook community, including a gentleman named Frederick, who commented, Frank's show is very good, but nothing like your wit and wisdom, Doug. I'll be tuning in. Well, thank you, Frederick. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
For that, slam.
Trust me.
Now, I have to say, I've got coffee mug envy that you have a James Garfield coffee mug.
I owe this mug squarely to the first lady of our radio station, Margot Katsimatidis. She was listening to me complain about how my wife had broken, accidentally, a James Garfield mug that I'd purchased in Ohio. Can't get it online, can't find it. Sure enough, she finds two very unique James Garfield mugs and brings them, sends them down to the radio station.
All right, top this. I have a Gummo Marx mug.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, that is cool.
That's available on Zazzle.
Only one who could top that is someone that might have a Harpo Marx mug.
No, well, I think when you get into – when you get past – Zeppo, and you're down to Gummo.
It's true.
You are really in the weeds.
It's true. It's a better chance of finding a Karl Marx
exactly.
mug, that's for sure. So, Doug, you were, after you did the overnight show, first locally in L.A., then you did it in New York, then you did it nationally, it was syndicated all around the country, you were sort of conscripted back to morning show radio locally in KBC. You did a great job, very popular show over there. And then a couple of years ago, you decided to hang it up, and this was a part of your announcement at the time.
This Friday will be my last broadcast to KBC after 22 years on the air here. And this was a decision that I've been contemplating for a very long time, and I informed Drew Hayes, our program director, operations manager, and Don Grieco, our market manager, on October 1st that this would be my last year. And the reason is that there's other things that I want to do in life. There's things that I want to write. There's a couple of more films that I want to make with my wife. Not that kind of film. Got a dirty mind. And, well, actually, now that I think of it, no. So the point is, after 22 years of getting up at O Dark 30, it's time to pass the baton, and the station will announce who will be taking over the morning show in a couple of days. You'll find out. And I think you'll be very happy. And I'm very happy. I'm very excited about what comes next. It's a little scary, I admit. But it's also very exciting. And it's also, I want to make this very clear, 100% my decision. I could not be more proud of this radio station and my years spent. I spent over a third of my life here. So as I get ready to leave this Friday, which will be the last broadcast, I leave with nothing but love for this radio station, the people I have worked with, and the people I work with. By the way, anybody need a Kleenex? By the way, I have some Kleenex. Anybody need Kleenex?
Don't get me started.
Tears of joy.
So here we are. I guess that was about 2.5 years ago. How have you found being off the radio? What have you been up to since you've left radio? And do you miss being on radio on a daily basis?
I certainly don't miss being on a daily basis because, and we talked about this before, I just think that things got so angry. And this is a personal opinion, obviously, but I just think that the medium became too enmeshed in political wars. That one of the, you know, we were talking before about Shep and Gene Shepard, and I just think that radio as a medium is capable of doing much more than it does. To the constant just chewing over the right-left arguments and trolling the papers to see who are we mad at this morning and then chewing that for 12 hours until the next disaster happens. I mean, all that stuff is important, obviously. But especially in these hours, it's like, do we want to get into a fight about the Israeli-Palestinian situation at 3 a.m? You do? Molly does. All right, well, then bring it on. You know, that's the beauty.
That's why she's only temporary. She's only filling in for the day.
No, but I mean, I used to tell people, I don't have Yasser Arafat on line 5. We're not going to solve this, you know. But if you wanted to. So I just, after years and years and years of it, I just felt like I turned 60 and there were other things that I wanted to do. And it was time to go. It's, you know, it's better to go early than to stay too long, you know.
One of the frustrating things for me as somebody that was working early mornings at the time, and you were my morning commute because of the odd hours, is I so loved the show that you were doing, Red Eye Radio. I thought it was a bunch of things that are all too rare in radio. I thought it was different. I thought it was funny. I thought it was intelligent. And I thought it was incredibly intimate. And then the show that came after you in the overnight slot, nothing against them or anybody that listened to it, it kept the name that you had, but it was a totally different show. It was basically the same sort of cookie cutter political talk show that you hear in any market in the country any time of day. Was that difficult for you to see this show that you clearly spent literally decades shepherding and working so hard to be different and build an audience, to see that name and this audience you built co-opted by people doing something very different from what you were doing?
Well, they pay me for the name.
But they did. So that makes it a lot easier.
That took some of the sting off it.
I can imagine.
Not well, but, you know, it's a taste. Not really. I tell you, first of all, the producer of that show is a good buddy of mine. He started with me, and he's on the original version, and he's still there, and a great guy. And they've done fine, and I wish them well. But the
same thing is, same here. I wish.
Yeah,
I
know. You know,
well.
There's room for everybody, and. But the reality is that when I went back to mornings, now my day was starting at 3:30 in the morning, and I had my own show prep to do, so I wasn't hearing a lot of it. So it really became, I mean, I'm not a nostalgic person in that regard. I had an experience with it that was wonderful, and I still think the local version in LA was the best version of that, because it was, you know, we had 5 hours of just kind of. You mentioned intimate, and I've always believed that. I'm sure that your listeners feel the same way. I don't think that overnight show should have guests. Good night. No, but I'm serious. I mean, I really do think that there's a one-on-one relationship between an overnight host, because people are either listening in bed. It's never both the husband and the wife. One of them is listening through earbuds, and the other one is elbowing them, hoping they'll go to sleep. Or it's somebody who's working a quiet job, or they're – you know, the internet made the world a 24-hour mm-hmm. world, as you know. And now it's not just cab drivers and night watchmen and doormen anymore. It's a whole other world where everybody is up doing things. But you have their attention for a long period of time. Morning drive, people are busy. They've got the kids in the car. They're dropping them off. They're making their early phone calls for work. And it's little short segments with a lot of information, the market check, sports, had the Mets, had the Dodgers, you know, whoever, the Yankees, how'd they do. Whereas at nighttime, you have a long time to kind of, it's like an LP versus mm-hmm. a 45, to use an antiquated record analogy. But so I do think it's very intimate. And it's very satisfying, because having done that for a while, there are people who remember the show fondly, and that's wonderful. But I turned 60, and I just thought, well, you know, there's not that many. I'm only viable for a blink of an eye, you know, in today's world. So I better get out there and try to do a couple other things before I'm sitting at the mall holding my wife's handbag.
So last time we spoke to you back in October, you talked about this novel you're working on, Frank's Shadow.
Uh-huh.
How's that coming along, and what else are you up to?
Well, I finished the book, and now I'm trying to sell it, and that's, you know, a whole other process. And I still do the newspaper column every Sunday for the Southern California News Group, which is the L.A. Daily News, the Orange County Register, and 11 papers. I play a lot of softball, play a lot of old man softball. I play with an 87-year-old second baseman.
Wow.
I'm not kidding.
Fast pitch, slow pitch?
Very slow pitch. It's the stents versus the hip replacements every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. No, it's really fun. They have a very, very competitive senior softball. It's 55-plus age-wise. And it's a lot of fun, and some of the players are great. I played with a guy, and I'm not kidding, Frank. I played with a guy who's been playing the game for 80 years. For 80 years.
My goodness.
Wow. And he's pretty good. So it's fun, but you can hear, like, it's not the crack of the bat, it's the crack of our knees, you know, so it's a little bit of a challenge. You know what I did? I aged, all my friends would know who played with me when I was a kid, know that I'm the slowest person in the world. Glaciers are passing me. I'm that slow.
And now I'm one of the faster guys. I've aged into speed because if you play with really old people at 63, you could be one of the fastest guys.
What position do you play?
I play left field mostly.
In terms of radio.
Because I have a noodle arm. I can't throw anybody out.
What I used to love about this show is you would talk about softball. You'd talk about music. You'd talk about the books that you were reading.
Yeah.
You'd cover the gamut. Do you think there's still room these days for non-political talk radio on the AM dial?
Well, you're doing it. You have a great, to me, eclectic interests, which is what is what. Maybe it's because I have a short attention span, but I like the idea that in the middle of the night you can say, look, if you want to talk politics, we'll talk politics. But if you want to talk about what movie you saw or what you're watching or what your kids did or whatever, we'll do that. And then it's this kind of great gumbo that we got cooking here all night when it works. I loved it, too, when we get a nut. If you could get one nut, one really good, crazy person, you know, then it really kind of spices things up. And we also used to. Did you ever go to a caller and they fell asleep on hold?
Oh, that's our specialty.
Sleeper cell.
Yes,
that's what we used to call them. A sleeper. It's a sleeper cell. And we had one guy who was just sawing wood. He's just me. He was almost doing Three Stooges. And we just potted him up and left him underneath while we took all the other calls. And just everyone's just. It was fantastic. I mean, he was good for an hour, 10 minutes. So you could have fun, you know. So the answer is probably not, because a lot of the sort of esoteric stuff has been shuttled off onto podcasting. Mm-hmm. You say, well, you want to talk about that, you go do a podcast. But I actually think that in broadcasting, in the truest sense, you should cast broadly out to a large audience, and not everybody, you know, especially now. What is it? It's 2 o'clock in the morning. It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning. We've already talked about, you know, Andrew Giuliani running for governor. We got it. Nothing's broken lately.
Doug, you were the first person that I really heard talk about the border problem and illegal immigration. I want to get your take on what's happening there. Also, I do want to ask your take about the California recall election and what people can expect from that. Doug McIntyre is going to stick around for one more hour. If you have questions, if you have comments for him, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We'll continue with Doug McIntyre straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morning, everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Thrilled that for one more hour we have the benefit of being joined by one of the finest radio talkers I've ever heard. You know, it's funny when you listen to comedians. There's a lot of comedians that are very famous. Obviously, everybody knows Don Rickles and Richard Pryor and Jerry Seinfeld and Chris Rock and Eddie Murphy. But when you really talk to a comedian, a comedian that might be a celebrity or might be very famous, and you ask them who their famous, their favorite comedians are, a lot of times they pick a comic that's not necessarily as widely known as they are. But there are certain comedians that if you're a real comic, you're a fan of. Well, Doug McIntyre is a radio talk show host's talk show host, meaning whenever I talk with radio talk show hosts about who they think really has mastered this craft and handled it well, or near the top of everybody's list is Doug McIntyre, and I'm thrilled that he's joining me in studio for one more hour. Doug, you were, when you were on KBC, when you were doing McIntyre in the morning, and then when you were doing overnights and Red Eye Radio, you were very vocal about the problems with illegal immigration, about the problems at the border. Donald Trump ran a whole presidential campaign based on that. And now, with no Trump, with Biden coming in, we're seeing the situation at the border multiply and magnify and worsen. And there's a lot of confusion on the part of the Biden administration, so it seems, as to how to handle this. As somebody that's been following this issue for a long time, what's your take on what we're seeing at the southern border?
Well, it's a disaster. I mean, it's we've gone back to first of all, COVID lifting is helping draw people back because the economy tanking when the economy tanked because everything closed up because of COVID restrictions, that certainly impacted illegal border crossings because there weren't any jobs to come to. So that had a lot to do with knocking down illegal border crossing. And now as vaccines are getting out and people are starting to hire again. But the big thing is you got the president of the United States basically saying, if you come in, we're going to work with you and likely you'll get an amnesty. So what do you think is going to happen?
Right.
So it's a disaster. But the problem is that both parties have fumbled this issue for so many years. And, you know, the reason we talk so much about it in L.A. is obvious that it's been an issue out there for 40 years. I mean, it was an issue going way back when Harold Ezell was the Western Regional Director of the what's now called ICE, but it wasn't called that back then. You know, we were at ground zero, if you will, in Southern California, and obviously that's true in Texas as well. That's Southwest. It was perceived as a Southwest issue. But I think President Biden is, if he hasn't already realized it, he's very quickly going to realize that the country is not going to tolerate what they're seeing. And oddly, he made the similar mistake that Donald Trump made with the kids, because when Donald Trump was correct in isolating and determining that the children coming, unaccompanied children, had to be, the children were the keys to the kingdom, because once the kids were in the country, then they weren't going to separate the parents. Mm. So, but he instituted the family separation policy before he had facilities built. He just made the decision, and overnight, seemingly, they were starting to have thousands of children pile up in these detention centers, which, of course, the country was nauseated right. Seeing the pictures. And I had Jeff Sessions on the show when he was still
in the Senate.
When he was an attorney general.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay,
and he was the only person in the administration who really knew and cared about the issue. But he was surprised. You know, he got surprised by the announcement from the president that this was going to start immediately. And they didn't have the facilities in place. So you're taking three-year-olds away from their parents. And there was, you know, a three-year-old only knows mommy and daddy. They don't know their names. So they didn't even have a system in place to be able to attach them again with their parents. Well, amazingly, the Biden administration has done the same thing. They now they've got thousands of kids coming across the border, and they don't have any way of – they don't have enough places for them to be cared for properly.
There's even now talk of completing the wall that President Biden campaigned
against.
Well,
I've always believed that you have to have a physical barrier to give the Border Patrol a fighting chance. And, you know, I'm so tired of all the arguments. We've heard all the arguments. It's not like the Berlin. We're not building a wall to keep people in. We're building a wall so that we can get control of a situation that's out of control. We've been fighting this. It would be like if your house is on right. fire and the fire department shows up and just puts out the kitchen, but the other rooms are on fire. You got to, you know, or to use a Southern California wildfire analogy that I used a million times. The first thing, when we have those terrible wildfires that are burning thousands of acres, the first thing people ask is, how much containment do you have? And until you get 100% containment, you can't put the fire out. You have to stop the fire from spreading. Well, we've never gotten this problem under control. It ebbs and flows depending on how the economy is working. So you have peaks and valleys. And obviously when you had the previous president was using tough rhetoric on the issue and then the economy went south because of COVID, there were fewer border crossings. But still, even during the Trump years, we were averaging essentially the city of Pittsburgh entering right. the country illegally every year.
Amazing. It's amazing. So there was an op-ed in the New York Times a week or two ago by the former ambassador to Mexico, Chris Landau, ambassador in the Trump administration, who said that the problem is primarily domestic. It's the fact that law enforcement is not going after American businesses who will hire illegal immigrants, and that the Congress and the federal bureaucracy do nothing to mandate the enforcement of E-Verify.
Well,
do you buy that?
Yeah, well, but it's not just that. It's all of the above. You know, everybody looks for whoever the safe target is to blame the problem on. But to me, I'll get to what I think is the overarching issue. Both parties, for very different reasons, were fine with open borders. The Democrats saw the people coming in as
voters.
Future voters, yeah, and as customers for social welfare programs that they administer, yeah, at the local level, if not at the federal level. You have more poor people coming into cities. Well, now you need more public housing. Now you need more everything. And you have people coming in who literally have nothing. So, yes, they need more everything. And on the Republican side, we had the corporatists who they couldn't outsource every job.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't outsource a driveway paver. You can't outsource a meatpacking or poultry industry worker because it's got to be fresh to table. But you can insource cheap laborers and drive down the wages of working people. This is why Cesar Chavez was opposed to illegal immigration, because he understood that if you have a constant source of even cheaper labor coming in, it lowers the wages of the people who are on the first rung of the ladder of success.
And until a few years ago, Bernie Sanders, for that same reason.
Well, everybody, look, this is just a rising tide lifts all boats and an ebbing tide lowers all boats. It's not that complicated. And even on the homeless situation. This has contributed enormously to homelessness, because if you have millions of people come into the country illegally, they're not moving to, you know, Bel Air. They're not moving, you know, to the North Shore of Long Island. They're going to the cheapest housing stocks. And in Southern California, many times it's illegal garage conversions, it's whatever. But it priced people who were already there to the streets.
No, it's a real problem that it seems.
It's totally solvable. And we need to keep in mind, this is a global phenomenon now, because you're seeing the mass migration of people is not just happening here. It's happening all over the world. Germany's experienced. Holland has experienced it. France is experiencing it. So it's a solvable problem. And, you know, I don't believe I do believe ultimately that we should do something as soon as possible for the DACA kids. I don't believe that you visit the sins of the father on the kid, a kid who was essentially only knows America. They were carried in as an infant and they were raised here. They serve in the army, for God's sakes. They're putting their life on the line for the United States of America. They should have citizenship. But what do you do about the next 10 to 20 million people are going to come in? And what we're doing now, it doesn't work. It hasn't worked for 40 years. And I don't know. The politics is so broken. I don't know that we're ever going to get past it, because there's, you know, the politicians, I think, would rather have the issue to point fingers at each other than to solve it.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're right. 1-800-848-WABC. Doug McIntyre is here. It's 1-800-848-9222. John is in Brooklyn. Hello, John.
Frankie Five Boroughs, great to talk to you, and you too, Doug.
Hey, John, how are you?
You're very good. We miss your voice. Well, a question about talk radio. Did you, like, do you, when you're doing overnight or whatever, do you enjoy talking to callers, or did you just put up with talking to callers?
Well, there were certainly conversations where and by the way, if you read the email, there were callers who barely put up with me. But no, for the most part, I absolutely love talking to the callers, and because people would surprise you. I remember one night, and you should do this, Frank, because you'll have a blast, especially in this market. One night, I don't know what made me think to do this, but one night I went, and this was in L.A. I said, okay, here's tonight's show. When did you get shot? And all night long, people called in with stories of when they got shot. I mean, for 5 hours. We couldn't answer the phones fast enough. I don't know what made me even
think of
that.
I'm going to write that one down.
But people called in all night long and just told. And then one night, this was just for some stupid reason, I just said to amuse myself, I guess, I said, tonight we're only taking calls from people named Tony.
And we got a couple of Tonys called, and then finally they realized, just tell him your name is Tony. We're not asking to see your license. This isn't Costco. You don't have to show ID to get it. You know, but it took them about a half an hour to realize. And then for all night, Tony, line three, Tony. Everybody was Tony. You know,
that's very funny.
So you can just
You can call me Tony, Doug.
All right.
You could call me Ray, right? You could call me Paul.
You can call me Al. But, no, I really think the engagement with the listeners is what makes great talk radio, and you were a master at that.
Well, that's very sweet of you to say, and that's what Frank was mentioning, that word intimacy. I really do believe that overnight talk radio specifically is the most intimate form of, well, porn maybe, but other than that, it's the most intimate form of the entertainment industry, because it really is a one-on-one transaction between the host and the audience if you're doing it right. And that's why I think, you know, when you've got two hosts talking to each other all night long, they don't need the audience.
Exactly.
You know, you're like a voyeur on their experience as opposed to an actual exchange.
Thank you, John. 800-848-WABC. Mike is in New Hyde Park. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Frank. How are you? Hello, Doug McIntyre. It's Mike Finnegan.
Hey, Mike. How are you? I went to high school with Mike.
Is that true?
I went to kindergarten with Mike.
What was Doug like in kindergarten, Mike?
Exactly the same. Wouldn't shut up.
Exactly the same. Smartest guy in the room. Funniest, too. My sister is not 75, though.
Oh, yeah, I know. She's mad at me.
I'll leave it at that.
She sent me a text I can't read on the air. So.
I'm sure she did.
Yeah.
Nice to hear you on the radio, guys. But I just wanted to get your take, Doug. Actually, since you've been off the air, a couple of legends have left the airwaves. Imus, Larry King, Rush, and, well, before you left the air, but Tom Snyder, talking about intimacy over the overnight airwaves on some of these guys.
We'll include Barry Farber in that list, too, who passed away last year.
Well, that's a great list, Mike. I mean, you know, obviously Rush, this is, you know, everybody moved up one when Rush died because this is the house that Rush built. I mean, whether you loved him or hated him, there's probably 600, 800 radio stations that are in this format because of him. So he was a giant talent. You know, Larry King, you know, I don't know what to say about. I worked with Larry King once, very briefly. We did. You know, remember the famous when Bill Clinton got the
saxophone?
The saxophone,
yeah, on Arsenio.
No, well, it wasn't. Yeah. It was actually they gave him a gold plated saxophone at this foundation dinner that Mark Rich's former wife.
Oh, sure, Denise Rich. Okay.
Denise Rich did. I wrote the show.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
And Larry King was emceeing it. And this is the only thing I tell you. Larry would only – I wrote the opening monologue, all the introduction of the various guests, and Larry tells me at the rehearsal, goes, it's got to be on blue index cards. It's got to be on the blue index cards. So I had to spend the rest of the night till like 4 in the morning retyping everything onto blue index cards so Larry King would read it.
That's your Larry King memory.
Well, that's you know, he was a fixture at Dodger Stadium. KBC had the Dodgers for many years. So you'd hang out in the press box, and Larry was always there. And I remember driving through Beverly Hills one time, and he was standing in front of his house, I guess, with the blue shirt and the suspenders, with the little tissue around his collar, so he didn't get makeup on his shirt, just in the middle of the day. And I don't know if he was trying to flag a cab or what he was doing, but he was in a residential. They were just standing out by the garbage cans.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Mike. Good talking to you, Mike.
800-848-WABC. Bill is on I-95. Hello, Bill.
Hey, thanks, guys. Hey, Frank, is this the show where you had the guy from The Godfather a couple weeks back or a month or so ago? It was very entertaining. Johnny Russo.
He's a character, that's for sure.
That was unreal.
Thank you.
And, Doug, it's been so interesting listening to you. You know, again, I think as we said, I really didn't know your name or know you, and just so interesting. So I hate to even ask what I'm asking, but the world that we've lived in since the election and, you know, whichever side we're on, there's a lot of things that look pretty bad, pretty divided. And, you know, a lot of things that we, you know, I'm maybe 5 years younger than you, that our generations grew up with, looks like it may be going out the window. Do you think it's going out the window, or you think this is going to, that we're as a country going to kind of get through this and be the strong country that we were? love to get your feedback.
Well, that's a big question. It's a great question. I don't know anybody who hasn't thought about this, because the world has changed rapidly. And I'm going to go back to kind of what I was saying earlier about the immigration issue being a global problem. This is not just what's happening here, is happening all over the world. And I've got a kind of an odd theory on this, and it's this may not make a lot of sense, but I'm going to try it anyway. I really think that we're going through certainly an historic epic, something on the scheme of like the move from the agrarian age to the Industrial Revolution, only in the microwave oven. It's happened so fast. You know, when the internet came along, we didn't know where it was going to go. And now it has taken us to places that we couldn't conceive of, like, you know, jihadists are able to find each other and Proud Boys are able to find each other and old friends from kindergarten can find each other. So it's got all these fantastic aspects, and it's got, you know, child predators finding each other. So it's got these terrible aspects. But one of the most significant things that has happened is it has liberated people from geography. That people grow up now playing video games with friends around the world. They're gamers. I got all thumbs. I don't know how to use any of these things. The last game I played was Pong. Okay, so I know young people grow up literally with friends who are global. They're not necessarily the kid down the block, or if you move to another country, you can continue to read the newspapers you read, follow the sports teams that you followed, speaking the language you spoke, without having to assimilate. And this is happening all over the world. And as a result, I think that the very concept of nation states is jeopardized, that people do not have the same allegiance to their town. You got PTAs where they can't get anybody to join because people are connected to things, but they're not necessarily connected to their community.
No. It's very true. Bill, thank you for the call. 800-848-9222. If you want to chat with Doug McIntyre, we'll continue for the rest of the hour. Hey, a lot of us who love radio always love looking back at some of the radio talk people like Doug McIntyre, like Jay Diamond, like Ron Kuby, people that aren't on the radio anymore, and we wish they were, folks like Richard Bay, and there's still a lot of great new talk radio talent, and we're very, very pleased to showcase some of that talent right here on this radio station. And one of the people that is doing very well in terms of generating interest and generating an audience is Greg Kelly. And he's on our station every afternoon from 1 to 3. He's entertaining. He's informative. He's got a lot of interesting, compelling guests, a lot of interesting conversations and wide variety of topics. So if you haven't sampled the Greg Kelly Show, I do hope you'll check it out this afternoon from 1 to 3 p.m. But I'll tell you, the most interesting thing to happen to me this week is the fact that I finally got around to trying the Easy Flow personal air filtration system. Maybe you're listening in New York, maybe you're listening in California, maybe in Jersey, but chances are you're listening in a jurisdiction that still requires you to wear a mask a good portion of your workday. It's not just for construction workers or waiters or bartenders. Even if you work in an office, chances are if you interact with people, they make you wear a mask. This Easy Flow personal air filtration system is incredible. What it does is it pushes fresh filtered air directly into your mask, allowing you to breathe normally and more comfortably. It protects you from contaminated air entering from the gaps. It's recommended by medical professionals everywhere. It was tested in an FDA lab. It's medically proven to filter 99.7% of virus and bacteria, including COVID. It makes your mask more effective. It makes it more comfortable. Even if you want to bring it to the gym and you have to wear a mask while you're working out, you'll actually be able to breathe. So you can get yours today by going to easyflowusa.com. I've tried this, and it really is like you're not even wearing a mask. EasyFlowUSA.com. That's EasyFlowUSA.com. And if you enter the promo code Frank, you'll save 15% off your purchase. So check out EasyFlowUSA because you'll have fresh air everywhere.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
When the evening sun goes down, you will find me hanging round. The nightlife ain't a good life, but it's my life. Many people just like me dreaming.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano, here for the hour with Doug McIntyre. Doug, what is this? Who are we listening to?
Willie Nelson.
The great Willie
Nelson.
That's
Willie Nelson.
A good life, but it's my life.
Oh, that nightlife.
A perfect song for overnight radio. When you would do this show, or an overnight radio show for 5 hours and sometimes 6 hours, depending on what iteration of the show you were doing, what was your methodology of show prep? What would you do? What would you do?
Well, during the day, I'm probably doing the same thing you're doing, the same thing that I was doing, which is you read Drudge, you follow all the headlines, you follow all the breaking stories, and you pick for the overnight show. It was I would pick a couple of things that were of interest to me, and I would usually come on the air and talk about that, and then end it by saying, "And if you want to talk about that, great. But if not, we'll talk about everything and anything you want to get into." So then we were off to the races, and it was interesting sometimes to see what people were, what people actually cared about versus what the cable news channels were covering or what the mainstream media was fixated on. Like, for instance, I remember when the whole Gary Condit, the Chandra Levy.
I knew you were going to say that. It's so funny. Really, I knew that you were going to say that. I was going to say the words Chandra Levy.
Covering that story. Nobody ever called in on that topic until the night of the Katie Couric interview. And then that's all people wanted to talk about for one day.
Mm.
But it was a story that they would share. So, you know, you can never quite – it was – I think that this was kind of an interesting barometer when you throw the phones open and say, what do you want to talk about? You know, people have a different news agenda than necessarily what you've done your show prep for.
You were at KBC. You were here at this radio station. Are those the only two radio stations?
I did one day at KFI in Los Angeles.
One day. How did that turn out?
Well, it was fine. It was between jobs, and they had me come in and fill in for Tim Conway Jr. And I did one day, and then I started doing the morning show again. I started doing the syndicated Red Eye. I guess it was. But other than that. That really was the whole
gig. So those three stations, WABC, KABC, KFI, for most of their history have been seen primarily as conservative talk stations.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would characterize your own politics, but you used to talk on the radio about how you had voted for President Obama in 2008. Do you think that there's room for, forgetting about non-political talk, do you think there's room for non-conservative political talk on stations like this one?
No.
Ask the answer.
I really don't. I don't think that there is. I don't think that there's. I mean, nobody's proven that it works. I mean, let's put it this way. They've tried repeatedly to do left-wing talk radio or progressive talk radio, and it hasn't worked. And I think that the reason it hasn't worked is they don't need it. They've got everything else. Mm-hmm. So every newspaper and every, you know, cable news channel except for the obvious ones and all the mainstream media leans to the left and with a progressive point of view. So there wasn't really a need for it. My own personal politics, as I've gotten older, I've become less dogmatic about things because, in my personal opinion, I just think that the game of politics is played exactly the same way by both sides. In terms of trumpeting issues out there in order to fire up the base. It's really super serving the base, oftentimes at the expense of the truth. And it was time to get out when I really felt like nobody really was interested in learning anything. It was just interested in you know, the ethos of the mafia of you put one of ours in the hospital, we put one of yours in the cemetery, became the ethos of radio. It wasn't about talking to people from the other side to find out how they think. It was about destroying them. and I don't want to be in the destroying business.
You're exactly right. You know, it's so funny. When I would talk about the Cuomo scandals,
right,
and I would say, well, you know, these sexual harassment allegations really aren't very substantive. And you would – I'd hear from so many Trump supporters who would maybe begrudgingly agree with me but say, but you see what they did to Kavanaugh. You see what they did to Trump. That means we have no choice but to go after this guy.
Well, I know, and that's the circular firing squad that we've been in for a very long time. And I go back to, you know, the internet and the phone and your social media. You see, that caller who asked that interesting question about all the changes that we're going through and will we come back? And said, I don't know because we're in it 24 hours a day. Now, this stuff follows you in your phone. Christmas Day, you're at the dinner table and people have their phones and they're downloading stories that outrage them. Mm. And or they're posting on social media because somebody put a post that they don't. And at some point you have to say there's more to life than this. You know, you can't live in perpetual outrage.
I've been talking with a lot of New Yorkers and Californians, meaning people that have lived in New York and moved to California or people who've lived on both coasts over the course of the last month. Because a month ago, there was a pretty groundbreaking article that came out, and I've been very eager to get your take on this. So far, the four people that I've spoken to about this, three of them feel one way, one feels the other way. And it has to do with the New York Times article that came out a month ago today, saying that California's bagel scene is now better than New York. New York Times saying that California actually now makes better New York-style bagels than New York. As a former New Yorker, as somebody that's visiting New York now, as someone that lives in California, give me your honest assessment of the bagel scene, California versus New York.
I'm going to have to punt on the bagels because I don't eat a lot of bagels anymore. But here's the California back in the day used to have terrible food. It was surprisingly awful. And that for the last 35, 40 years has really, you know, Wolfgang Puck really had a lot to do with that. He really upped the game. And now the food is really astonishing. But this is one thing. Let me give you, if you travel to California, if you travel to Los Angeles from New York, this is one way to guarantee to tick off everybody. Don't start complaining about the pizza because people don't want to hear it. You know, it's like it's 3,000 miles away. If you need pizza that tastes the way it did when you were a kid that bad, then go home. Mm. All right. Don't walk around in Westwood complaining that the pizza isn't as good as it was when you were living in Queens.
You know? 800-848-WABC. Doug McIntyre is here. Doug, very quickly, and there's a full bank of calls of people who want to talk to you, but I have to get you to weigh in on what we're seeing in California in terms of this recall election. The eyes of the world turned to California back in 2003 when Craig Davis was recalled and Arnold Schwarzenegger was elected. Now there's a recall moving forward with Gavin Newsom. How do you see this playing out? It doesn't seem to be getting the same amount of attention as that Craig Davis recall, but certainly
well, there's no movie star that's running.
Well, maybe Caitlyn Jenner, right?
You know, the Schwarzenegger recall, people forget Tom McClintock is now a very conservative congressman. He got a million votes in that too. I mean, that was an amazing time. Gavin Newsom will be. I think it's almost a lock that he's going to be recalled and have to face a recall election. I don't see him losing. I find it hard to believe that the state that voted for Biden-Harris overwhelmingly is going to vote for Kevin Falconer, the former Republican mayor of San Diego, or any of the other
people.
Well,
they could recall Newsom and replace him with another Democrat, right?
Well, so far nobody's done that, and that's the difference. You see, in the Gray Davis race, the lieutenant governor, Cruz Bustamante, jumped into the free-for-all along with like 800 people. And that weakened him. And there's been some talk that the former mayor of L.A., Antonio Villaraigosa, may run. But so far, no prominent Democrats have jumped ship, and I don't think they will in this case. And I think that Newsom is likely to survive. And of course, you know, now he's reacted to it because what was driving the recall in this case was the strict shutdowns over COVID. And now with the vaccines widely distributed, I mean, L.A. is supposed to have herd immunity by July. They're starting to open things up again. And I think a lot of the steam is coming out of that. So he will be recalled. I think that's a lock. They've got so many. What's going to be more interesting, believe it or not, is a local, is a sort of a micro recall. There's a petition drive to recall the district attorney of L.A. County. Mm. Let me tell you something about L.A. County. A lot of people don't realize. L.A. County has over 10 million people. L.A. County is bigger than most countries. L.A. County is bigger than most states of the union. And it's the only county in the country with a population north of 10 million. It's a really, wow, really big place.
Bigger than Manhattan.
Yeah, it's 10 million people, wow, in the county. So it's bigger than New York City. And New York City is, what, 8.5 million or,
sure,
something like that.
Right.
So it's a very big place. The district attorney of L.A. County is a very powerful position. And George Gascon, who is the current L.A. district attorney, just elected, is a far-left progressive, and he has completely alienated the county, the local police organizations, the Deputy District Attorneys Association, the former L.A. County District Attorney, Steve Cooley, is signing a petition to recall him. And that could be heading to a recall. It'd be very, very interesting to see what happens on that one.
Well, 800-848-WABC. Pete is in New Jersey. Hello, Pete.
Hey, Pete.
Yeah. Yeah, Doug, did you start Red Eye Radio, or how did that happen? You went from the morning show to the Red Eye Radio thing.
Yeah, well, no, what happened was I originally started doing Red Eye Radio in Los Angeles from midnight to 5, and then they moved me to mornings in Los Angeles, and then we syndicated Red Eye Radio nationally with WABC as the flagship. And then I went back to mornings, and the other guys took over Red Eye Radio. So, yeah, we started it as a local show in Los Angeles, and then it became a national show, and it still is.
Was it your baby or somebody else?
That was my baby.
Oh, okay. Good job.
Thanks, yeah, Pete.
There that was
go.
My baby.
800-848.
It took the car and wrecked the car when it grew up.
800-848-WABC. Jane is in Greenwich Village. Hello, Jane.
Hey, Jane.
Hi, this is Jean.
Jean.
Oh, hey, Jean.
Sorry.
Okay. Actually, both Frank and Doug, I'd like to say to both of you, with the pandemic, I am more a at-home radio listener.
Uh-huh.
And I love your interviews, Frank.
Thank you.
They take the place of reading, which I find too stressful to read a book, and the libraries are closed, so I can't take anything out. And Barnes & Noble won't let me sit down and read a book to just look at it before I buy it. And so you are great.
Oh,
and I love the Sunday nights with Sinatra, because it brings me back to learning an awful lot about him that I never even knew. And Doug, I want to tell you, you've brought me back to Gene Shepherd, the 60s, the Great Ice Cream Wars.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yes, I do. Leopold Doppler and the Great Gravy Boat Riot. There were so many stories that came out.
And the thing is that Doug, he spoke about his personal life and the growing up with the kids he knew.
Well, Gene's, you know, bread and butter were kids' stories, and it's... He said something that I will never forget, because it's the most – it describes being a little kid as well as I've ever heard it described. He said, when I was 9 years old, I didn't have secrets. I was a secret.
Isn't that something else? Yeah. And didn't he also – did he read some poetry?
Yeah. He would –
Robert Service
and also was – very big with progressive jazz that actually I'm not a particular fan of. Thelonious Monk, he did stuff with Monk, and he was a very and wrote for Playboy magazine. He had a very, you know, he traveled with the Beatles for 2 weeks.
Did he really? I never knew the end of his life that you seem to describe to us tonight, that he moved down to Florida.
Yeah. He when he was writing for Playboy magazine, they sent him in 1963
to England, uh-huh. and he traveled with the Beatles for 2 weeks and wrote about it for Playboy. You can find it online. It's a fascinating uh-huh. it's a fascinating take about the Beatles very early, right before they came to America and everything blew up huge.
Thank you.
Anyway, Nina. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
800-848-WABC. Tom is in Westchester. Hello, Tom.
No, it's Tony. Just kidding. Gene Shepard was a true radio person. I say that because I'm 73. I started listening to him in the 50s, also whenever he ended in the 70s on the radio. I saw him at Carnegie Hall sometime in the early.
I saw him at Princeton. I saw him in Princeton about 1971 at Alexander Hall. Yeah.
Did you find him to be so self-conscious in front of a crowd as opposed to the way he was totally comfortable on the air?
Well, you know, he performed differently in front of an audience because even the Limelight shows. Because there were people, he was more of a comedian and pandered a little bit more. And you have to do that when, you know, it's very, because I do a lot of live events in the L.A. area. And when the people are there looking right at you, you know, you're getting, to, you know, we're in this vacuum here yeah. and in the studio. And, you know, if the board ops are still awake by the end of the show, it's been a hit. By the way, we've lost them about a half an hour ago, unfortunately. But
also, I attended a double taping of Rush Limbaugh's TV show on Thursday.
Uh-huh.
And I found him that way, too. And the little bit I saw Michael Savage's TV show, which didn't last.
Well, here's why. Rush's TV show, I didn't know Savage even had a TV show, but Rush's TV show didn't work. It didn't work for this reason. First of all, Rush needed a half an hour just to warm up. And the show was 22 minutes in a strip syndication. And because TV has to have pictures to go with the words, he had to talk to specific points at specific times so the control room could put the picture up or roll the video. And that's not what he did. What he did was have a theme and kind of weave words around and find his way there.
Well, that's the
pictures were paralyzing.
You know, that's one of the reasons I'm so fascinated. And thank you for the call, Tom. I'm so fascinated by people who are able to master different forms of communication so effectively. You know, Rush Limbaugh, Howard Stern, born radio people, right? Now, you were a tremendous radio storyteller, but you've been able to translate that same set of skills to writing a newspaper column, which is certainly a world of difference in terms of constructing a point, telling a story, and so forth. And as you mentioned, all the terrific work that you do as a live event MC. Is that natural for you, or did you have to work at that?
Well,
different
they all have their own. Each format has its own quirks and peculiarities. But I found the biggest adjustment. You see, I started as a writer, so the newspaper column wasn't particularly hard. Wasn't a particularly hard adjustment to make. The hard adjustment was going from doing overnights to doing morning radio. Because where you got this huge open-ended thing where you have blah, 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 you know, for hours on end. And then in the morning, you got to go to traffic. We got to go to Wall Street Journal report. And then how'd the Yankees do? And, you know, so you have all these little pieces. So you had to condense. If you're trying to tell a story, you have to really shrink it down to the minimum. And, you know, there were people who were great masters at that and made it look easy. And then, you know, it took me a couple of years, really, before I finally was, this is what you do.
I know you're going to the Met game on Saturday.
Yeah.
You've remained loyal to the New York Metropolitans, even though you've lived in California for so many years. There's some discussion that they may bring back, even if it's only on a temporary basis, the black jerseys, uniforms.
Opposed.
You're against
totally
it.
Opposed. Did you see what the Red Sox are going to do?
No, I didn't see
that.
Oh,
my God. The Red Sox are going to wear yellow jerseys with blue writing.
Oh,
they're going to have no – as an alternate jersey. And this is all Nike. Hey, look, in 5 years, we're heading here rapidly. In 5 years, they're going to look like soccer players.
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to have logos. They're all going to have logos from corporate, from product sponsorships.
Oh, I don't doubt
on the jersey.
It. Yeah.
That's where it's going. But you're the Red Sox. There's no Red Sox. I mean, but I didn't like the
black jersey.
And also the players, you want to wear a black shirt in August. It's 114 degrees.
I think that's one of the
85% humidity.
They got rid of them. But as far as I'm concerned, one question I do have for you, it has to do with lifestyle. You know, you're a husband and you have a family and a regular life, but you also did these overnight hours for a long time. How did you manage to balance that?
Well, it worked. My wife loved it because when I was on the radio, she could turn it off. When I'm in the house, I'm just the guy that won't shut up.
And she's still now, she just says, please don't yell at the television. We watch the Lester Holt show every night, and I'm yelling back at the news, you know, saying, no, what you should do here, that's not right. And she says, stop yelling at the television. And then now we watch Jeopardy together because we're old. We're watching Jeopardy, and this is how Jeopardy's
played.
Who's
your favorite of the guest hosts so far?
Well, I like Ken Jennings because he's got the DNA of it. And Frank, what's that kid, Dr. Oz?
Dr. Oz, please, Aaron Rodgers, Katie Couric.
I wouldn't let him put a Band-Aid on me. So we're watching Jeopardy, but we're older now. So all of it, it sounds like this. It's the guy who was in the thing that we saw. Remember, we saw the thing? Who is the guy that was in the thing that we saw? We can't remember any of the names. We'll get it like in a half an hour. Halfway through Wheel of Fortune, we can remember the names of the guys who were in Jeopardy.
800-848-WABC. We'll continue with Doug McIntyre next. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
Do nothing till you hear from me. Pay no attention to what's said. Why people tear the seam of anyone's dream.
Couple of minutes before 3 o'clock. Over, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. This is the great Jack Sheldon.
Yes,
right?
It is.
Doug McIntyre joining me. This has been a real, real treat. We'll take some more of your calls at 800-848-9222. I always enjoyed listening to you describe and talk to callers about what they were reading. What are you reading now?
This is really bizarre. I admit that it's – I got to recommend an unbelievably fascinating book. And when I tell you what the title is and what the book is about, you're not even going to believe such a thing exists. The book is called – We Had a Small Real Estate Problem, and it's written by a guy named Cliff, spelled K-L-I-F, Nesterhoff. He's a Canadian. Cliff Nesterhoff, and the book is called We Had a Small Real Estate Problem, and it's the history of Native American comedy.
You're kidding.
No.
Wow.
And who knew? The book is absolutely fascinating. It starts from these Wild West shows like Wild Bill Hickok and all these Wild West shows, and goes to Will Rogers, who was 100% Native American, and the biggest star in the world. At the time, he had a newspaper column that had a daily audience of 40 million readers when the country's population was 140 million. So it's this enormous presence, and then it goes to a guy named Charlie Bell, who was the first Native American comic to appear in the Tonight Show, and intermingled of this is basically a sociological history of the Native American experience in Canada and the United States, which is not pretty. Mm. And I tell you, it really it changed my – I used to think things about changing the name of the Washington football team or the Cleveland Indians and stuff like that. Well, what's the big deal about it, right? It really the oppressed people get to decide what they're upset about.
So the book is We Had a Small
Real Estate – We Had a Small Real Estate Problem. So it's a quick read and utterly fascinating. And funny. I mean, really funny, because that's a punchline to a joke.
Yeah.
It used to be from them, we had a small real estate problem.
I can imagine.
I make these deep dives into history because I got time on my hands. So a couple of months back, I realized, gee, I've read a lot about Hitler, but I don't know anything about the rest of German history. Mm. And I did a big thing on where I read all kinds of books on Russia to try to make sense of all that craziness. So I did this deep dive, and now I am reading a 755-page biography of the Austrian diplomat Clemens von Metternich.
You got me. I thought
never
I knew a little
get
bit
laid
about
again.
History.
There's no way that you're going to get laid. And I told this when I met my wife, I was in volume three of a three-volume biography of President Benjamin Harrison. Three books on Benjamin Harrison. And I said, I got to get out of the house. I mean, this is just
Now, your wife was an actress when you met
still,
her, right?
Still is. Yeah, she was in All of President's Men. She was in The In-Laws. She was in The Frisco Kid with Harrison Ford and Gene Wilder. She did a lot of stuff, and she still works. Today, I called home, and she was an audition where she had to be a Lithuanian.
So she was on YouTube watching Lithuanians speak to try to figure out what the accent sounds like.
800-848-WABC. Ray is in Bethpage. Hello, Ray.
Yeah, Frank, love your show. Ray Howard from Bethpage. St. Mary's class of 1974.
Oh, you were a year before you were my brother's class.
Brother Jeff. Yeah. He was a great guy, great guy. Doug, I'm just calling to tell you that I love you. You're following you on Facebook. I love your articles and opinions. Enjoy your retirement. Not really. And calling to say thank you and keep it up.
Oh, that's very
well
sweet
said.
Of you to call.
Very
yeah.
nice, Ray. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Now, are you a big movie goer these days?
No. Here's the thing. If I my wife likes to go to the movies, and I hate going to the movies. I don't mind the movie, but I hate going to the movies.
So will you watch, say, a motion picture at home on Netflix?
It's painful for me to do it because I can't.
Why is it painful?
Because they're too long. It's 2 hours and 20 minutes.
You just confessed to reading a three-volume biography of Benjamin Harrison.
And I can do that. I can do that. Every night, every day, but sitting at home.
With all due respect to our 23rd president,
I don't like sitting there for 2 hours. It's like come on, I'm kidding. Check them. I had a watch that had an illuminated dial. You push a button and it lit up, and I called it my movie watch because that way I could hit it and say, how much longer do I have to sit through this thing? But now, if you read a great movie, it's such a miracle. Having worked in that racket, when a movie is great, it's a miracle because to get all that stuff that has to go right to go right is a miracle.
So you like to read. You play softball. What else do you do for fun?
That's pretty much it. I just sit and yell at the television. Bad memory, Jeopardy. You know, we got the grandkid. We got the grandkid, so we're playing with him, you know, all the time, which is great. Because, my kids, the boys, were stepsons, and they were older when I met Penny. So this is my – and my nieces and nephews were all on the East Coast, and I was out there, so I would see them. But there'd be big gaps, and as anybody knows who's got kids, 8 months for an infant is like a different being when you see them next. So to see the baby on a day-to-day basis is incredible. It's you get grandpa names and grandma
right.
names.
What are you?
I'm he's only 10 months old, so he doesn't speak yet. Right now it's just drool. But what we're training him is that it'll be Grandma and Mr. McIntyre. Because I like the idea of him saying, I want to hear him when he's five saying, we're going to Mr. McIntyre's
That's
I don't
brilliant.
Know what it's going to come out as. Who right. knows?
In our final 40 seconds together, Doug, I want to do with you something I don't know that I've done with anybody on the radio, but ask you the same 10 questions that that James Lipton used to ask all of his guests. Okay.
Right.
What's your favorite word?
My favorite word?
Yeah.
Good night.
What's your least favorite word?
Good morning.
What turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
I can't plug that website because it's $19.95 a month.
What turns you off?
Not the same website if you go deep enough. There's stuff in there that's sick.
Give us a hint as to your favorite curse word.
Favorite curse? It's not really a curse word, but my father used to say, and he's the only person to ever say this, his exclamation was, "Holy Hannah!" It's almost like Batman, you know?
Doug, I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this. Let's do it again next time you're in town.
Okay, Frank. Thanks for having me. Thanks, everybody. It's been a pleasure.
Keep asking questions.
Talk radio for New York and all of America. 107.1. This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
There are two fundamental problems in America. Good morrow, everybody. This is Frank Morano. Welcome to The Other Side of Midnight. The first is that society requires us to remember too many passwords. You want to log on to your bank account online? Got to remember your password. Want to log on to your email? Got to remember your password. Log on to your computer? You need a password for that. You want to pay your credit card bill? You need a password for that. And the other problem is that there are way too many streaming services. If you want to watch everything that's worth watching, you need about a dozen, minimum, a dozen different streaming services. You got to have Netflix. That used to be the thing. You could get by if you just had Netflix. Then, well, you don't just need Netflix. You need Netflix and Amazon Prime, but that's okay because it comes with your Amazon subscription. Okay, fine. So you got Netflix and you got Amazon Prime. Well, but what about all these episodes of The Office or Cheers or whatever else? You got to get Hulu for that. May create a lot of a great original programming. You got to have Hulu. All right, well, you got a Hulu. Well, what else am I missing? Well, you need Apple TV. Apple TV, okay, Apple TV. So up until recently, I was the victim of these two dueling problems in America. Too many passwords required and too many streaming networks required. And look, I am a professional wrestling fan, especially a fan of vintage professional wrestling. And I'm very excited to that WrestleMania is going to happen this weekend. And I'm hoping that I can watch a little bit of it. I'm a professional wrestling fan that rarely gets to watch professional wrestling because my wife doesn't like it. And if I have friends over, I feel like a little bit of a buffoon keeping wrestling on while I have a friend over. So I rarely watch it, but I still enjoy it. And I like going back and watching a lot of classic wrestling matches. So an interesting thing happened. About 2 years ago, I started subscribing to the WWE Network. And I think it's $5 or $6 a month, and I've been paying it. And then about a year ago, maybe a little less than a year ago, I tried to log on to the WWE Network to watch, I don't know, WrestleMania 3 or something. And I couldn't remember my password. I tried to reset the password online, and I just couldn't do it. So it was such a production to try and watch it that I wasn't watching it. I was just paying. Every month I would pay but not watch it because I couldn't remember my password, and I didn't want to sit there and go through the 20, 30, 40, 50-minute process that it would take to reset my password and do this and that. And I was, of course, just too lazy to cancel it and save the $5 a month. So they've been beating me for a while. Now, interesting thing happened. I don't know that we're paying for this, but somehow my wife and I are getting the Peacock Network. I'm sure we're paying for it because we're paying for everything. We're paying for streaming networks that I didn't even know existed. And so the Peacock Network is NBC's streaming network. And an interesting thing happened 2 weeks ago. The WWE Network merged with the Peacock Network. So now, I don't know how I have access to the Peacock Network, but I have access to it. And so now I can watch the WWE Network, which I've been paying for, but unable to watch. I can now watch it, and I've been watching it. Because this is WrestleMania week. I'm getting ready for WrestleMania. I'm excited about WrestleMania. Even though I couldn't tell you what any of the matches are or anything like that, but it's a big event. It's like the World Series or the Super Bowl. It's if you only watch one wrestling event a year, that's the one you watch. So then I'm scrolling through some of the past WrestleMania events, and I'm watching WrestleMania 6. You remember WrestleMania 6? That's where the Ultimate Warrior faces off against Hulk Hogan, fan favorite against fan favorite, champion against champion. A big deal. Andre the Giant was in that. That's when he went back to being a face. It was a really interesting WrestleMania. They had a lot of good stuff there. And I'm watching it, and I said, huh, that's not how I remember that happening. Sure enough, I do a little research, and I come up with this article. I come across this article. I first saw it in the New York Post, but it's been elsewhere. Headline, NBC Universal is scrubbing racist scenes from WWE matches. And sure enough, Peacock is censoring this library of events and tapes and videos and pay-per-views that they bought from the WWE. They're going back and removing all this racist content, all this offensive content. It's bad enough that they're going back and removing some of the blood from some previous wrestling scenes. But now, WrestleMania 6 featured, that was back in 1990. WrestleMania 6 featured a match between Rowdy Roddy Piper. You remember Rowdy Roddy Piper? He passed away not long ago, unfortunately. Hot Rod. He was great. Great wrestler. Rowdy Piper and Bad News Brown. Now, Piper was a white wrestler. He painted his face black while facing off against Bad News Brown, who was black. And Piper went out there. I can't play you the audio because I can't steal the audio from the WWE Network because it's now censored. But Piper went out there and he said, I hear Bad News Brown, how he's talking about Harlem and how he's proud to be from Harlem. Now I can stand here and I can be black. I can be white. Don't make no difference to me. It's what's inside. So they cut it all out because Roddy Piper put on black makeup. I have a major, major problem with this. Now, I recognize that they've done a lot of things over the course of the last 37 years that, viewed by today's standards, don't look great. Throw a warning on there. But don't tell me that I don't have a right to see what was out there. Then I want to see WrestleMania 6 as it aired. And then we can have a debate about whether that was appropriate or not. I don't think you can go back and take footage that already was out there and go back and rewrite history. I've got a major problem with this. And it's not just one event. Apparently, a source familiar with the situation told the New York Post that Peacock is reviewing all 17,000 hours of WWE content to ensure that it aligns with its standards and practices. Now, how about, if you're not sure this content aligns with your standards and practices, how about you think of that before you buy 17,000 hours of footage? What about that? But instead, what Peacock is doing is they have this massive library of content that has attracted millions of fans over the years that they're saying, we're going to go back and censor. And I don't think that's right. To me, they're trying to benefit from the fandom of professional wrestling, but not allow the professional wrestling events that already took place, we're not talking about new events here, not allow those professional wrestling events to be seen. 2005, the Survivor Series, Vince McMahon, who, you know, at this point was playing up the role of a big corporate villain persona. He said the N-word to wrestler John Cena. He said the actual word. He said the N-word. He then strutted past Booker T, a black wrestler, who said to Vince who said after he heard this, tell me he didn't just say that, meaning the N-word. Now, that was controversial at the time, back in 2005. And a WWE spokesperson defended Vince McMahon to TMZ. He called it an outlandish and satirical skit involving fictional characters similar to that of many scripted shows and movies. That's exactly right. That's 100% right. You know, I just watched Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. You know how many times they say the N-word in that? A lot more times than they said it at Survivor Series 19. I just watched People versus Billie Holiday. They use the N-word like crazy in that movie. Now, they're both wonderful works of art, but why is it okay for that to be viewed on streaming networks, but the same type of thing, a fictional skit with fictional satirical characters, which portray the bad guy as a racist for using that word, We're not allowed to watch that. To me, it stinks. 800-848-9222. I'd be curious as to your view. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We'll do the AC report in about 15 minutes. We're going to talk with Vicki Gold-Levy. She is an Atlantic City historian, and she's somebody that I've been eager to talk to for a long time. Happy to take your calls at 1-800-848-9222. By the way, one of the great changes we've made here at the radio station is we have brought back Larry Kudlow. Saturday mornings at 10, you can hear Larry Kudlow. I've been listening just about every Saturday after Michael Smerconish on CNN. You can listen as he gives his perspective on the market, on the economy, on politics, on a whole bunch of other issues. So if you haven't heard Larry's new show, he sounds just as good as he ever did every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. on 77 WABC. We'll get into Andrew Giuliani running for governor a little bit later if you want to comment on that or anything else that we covered along with Doug McIntyre. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Rick in New Jersey. Hello, Rick.
Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
Just quickly, the reason that you're getting Peacock, you're asking why am I getting it? I don't know. It comes with your cable subscription.
Oh, it does. It just comes with it. I didn't have to do anything.
Xfinity, yeah, no. Xfinity threw it in. You know, if you come with Xfinity, you now get Peacock.
So I have Spectrum. Is it included in Spectrum?
It might be. I mean, if Xfinity did it, I'm sure they're all going to be grabbing onto it. You know, but apparently Peacock can sell it to them easier than each one of us.
Well, I guess it makes sense. Thank you, Rick. I'm just happy to get it. I'm not questioning it.
I have to say it's not worth it, though.
You don't think Peacock's worth it?
No, so I pay for it.
Why do you pay for it?
Because I think there was something I wanted. So it was when I was on this big Law & Order kick, and they have all the original Law & Order and Law & Order SVU and all these backdated Law & Orders there. And I was like, I want to watch this. So I gave it a shot, and the programming on there is not great. I mean, the only thing that's really salvageable, I guess, is The Office. I love The Office, but even that, I've gotten over that Office kick.
But you're still paying.
I'm still paying because I forget to take it off my credit card every month.
That's how it is with five networks.
Yeah.
But they have the new Saved by the Bell on there. Right?
I watched it. It was not that impressed.
It wasn't good?
I remember I loved watching reruns of the original Saved by the Bell when I was younger. I was not impressed by this new one.
Even the original Saved by the Bell is not even that good, I'll be honest. I mean, I watched it too, but it's just okay.
Yeah, I'm watching it through a lens of I remember loving it as a kid. I'm sure you're probably right. It's not that great.
Yeah. You get The Office. I like that we have Cheers on there. We're watching Cheers.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Other than that, yeah, I guess there's not.
Isn't Frasier on there, too? Wasn't that an NBC show?
Yes. And they're coming out with a new Frasier on there.
Yeah. Oh, it's exclusively on the Peacock.
That's my understanding. All right. That's my understanding.
Makes sense, then.
800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Jeff is on Staten Island. Hello, Jeff.
Yeah, hey, good morning. How you doing, Frank?
Great.
I wanted to talk immigration with Doug, but I missed it. But all right, how about we change the subject? Gambling. I know you like to go to AC. I go every now and then. I'm looking to play some craps, and I wanted to find out what your favorite game is and strategy.
Well, my favorite game in terms of all the games in the casino or favorite strategy when it comes to craps?
How about favorite games and craps?
All right. Well, so it's an excellent question, Jeff, right? So I'm a craps player, too. I find that to be the most fun game in the casino by far. That's what I like to play. If you say, here's $100, play it on, you know, play whatever you want. I'm playing craps. The games those are not always the games that I find that I've won the most money at do sometimes include craps, but you lose it fast at craps, too. So I like Baccarat. I don't like Baccarat, but I find that I win money at Baccarat. And I like blackjack too, in terms of both winning money and the enjoyment of it. But for my money, there's nothing like craps for pure enjoyment. Now, the way I like to play craps is not the way I would ever teach someone to play craps. If you want, I have seen that if you want to do well at craps, the best thing you can do is bet the pass or don't pass with maximum odds and then also do one come bet. Now, the way I play it is much riskier, right? I play a high risk, high reward version of the game. So what I do is I'll play my pass line bet And then once the number's established, I'll play max odds on that. And then I'll place a come bet. And then I'll place max odds on my come bet. And then I'll place another come bet. And then I'll play max odds on that come bet. And then I'll place another come bet. So ideally, I will have the whole board filled with pass line or come bets. And then ideally, if someone holds the dice for a long time and doesn't crap out, you make a lot of money. Yeah. Now, the problem with that is if somebody craps out after I've got four come bets, then that means I've just lost $400 in 15 minutes. Wow. So it's a risky strategy.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question? Somebody mentioned to me, like I said, I'm just like been fiddling around. I actually went out to PA the other day and I was just playing a pass line. I wasn't really backing up when 4 and 10 were out, but I would do it with 6 and 8, and I was doing good. And I was like the only one rolling the dice. I was all by myself. It was great. But somebody mentioned to me, if you play the pass line, say it's 15. You put 15 on the pass line on the first the come out roll, and you put like a buck on the craps. Kind of hedge your bet. Did you ever hear anything
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I like the horn high yo. If people don't know what Jeff's talking about, so on the come out roll, if you roll a 2, a 3, or a 12, you lose your bet, right? So so let's say it's a $10 table or a $15 table, as Jeff mentioned. If you put a $2 or $3 bet on the crap, that's a way of even – it's a little bit of insurance. So even if you roll a 2, 3, or a 12, or the shooter rolls a 2, 3, or 12, you still don't lose your entire bet. It's like you're neutral. But on the same time, if you roll a 7 or a yo 11, you do lose your craps bet. Mm-hmm. What I like to do is I like to bet the horn, which is 2, 3, 11, 12. So this way I have a little bit of insurance – but but this way I still get paid if it's a yo 11. So, people do that.
How about baccarat? Can you just give me a brief thing on baccarat?
Yeah, I'm going to do a video on baccarat soon. Baccarat, okay. I'm a little hesitant to talk about on the radio, and I'll tell you why. Baccarat is the absolute simplest game in the world to play. Right? If you are able to add. You can play baccarat as well as any person in the casino. However, because of baccarat's history and so many Chinese and Asian players play baccarat, and there's dragons and there's a big glitzy board, all of the non-Asian players tend to be intimidated by the game. So I'm a little reluctant to explain how simple it is because I don't want all these non-Asians playing with me at the baccarat table. I don't want to be fighting for space at the baccarat table. It's tough enough when there's only four chairs. So
finish your thought, and then I'll just throw one thing
out. Okay, so I'm going to say very briefly. So baccarat is the card game equivalent of betting on a coin toss, right? There's two hands that you can bet on, player or banker, right? And basically you're betting on what is going to be the closest hand to nine. So tens and pictures are zero, and then numbers are the numbers, and sometimes you draw a third card, and whoever's closest to nine wins. If it's the player and you bet player, you win your bet one-to-one. If it's the banker and you bet banker, you win your bet one-to-one, although sometimes you have to play a commission. So it's almost the equivalent of betting on a coin toss.
Well, like I said, I went out to PA the other day, and I always wanted to try the baccarat. What they do is they have this like system where it's like stadium seating. They have a gentleman in the middle, and it's electronic the way you bet, and it's a lot cheaper. Mm. But you still can play. You know, I think I was playing $5 hands.
Where were you at? Wind Creek out there?
Wind Creek.
Yeah, that's where my cousins live and my aunt. I was only there once. It was okay. I like the Atlantic City scene a little bit more. But next time I'm out there to see my cousins, I may check it out.
Well, you know what was nice, though? This stadium seating, they actually have a live dealer. You know, he's in the middle. And you can wager as much as you want. You know, it was good for me because I always wanted to try it. But, you know, I'm a little hesitant. I'm kind of like new to the whole
thing. Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good table to try it at. A $5 table, it's a good way to learn the rules.
So,
all right, Jeff, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. 800-848-WABC. We are talking about the fact that NBC and Peacock are scrubbing their whole history of the WWE, this tape library that they bought. And there's, you know what it reminds me of almost? It's when Disney bought this radio station, okay? Disney bought this radio station from a company called Capital Cities. And then the most listened to person on this radio station was Bob Grant. Now, Bob Grant did a lot of great things on air, but he also had a history of using racially insensitive language. Now, they, you know, I don't want to get chronicle the things that he said on air. You could look them up. But Disney bought this radio station knowing Bob Grant was on it. And then they, N.J. Diamond, who, I mean, he was now not Bob Grant in terms of the things that he would say, but he would use some language that a company like Disney wouldn't be comfortable with. What did you buy the station for? I mean, how about you say to Disney, we're buying all of your properties except this radio station or except ABC Radio. I mean, essentially, they bought this radio station and tried to Disney-fy it. But what NBC is doing is even worse, because at least with Disney and Bob Grant, they were making changes prospectively. NBC and Peacock are going back and rewriting history. And I've got a big problem with it. 800-848-9222. It's 1-800-848-WABC. Brian is in New Jersey. Hello, Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
I think it's going okay, all things considered. Brian, you tell me.
No, I just heard you talking about the WWE, and I had gotten on a kick not too long ago watching some of the old footage.
Mm.
And even they... they censor the headshots.
They censor the headshots? You know, what do you mean, like with a chair?
Yeah, with a chair. So, like, you watch it, and somebody goes for a headshot, and they cut it out, and I thought I was seeing
something. Oh, my goodness. Well, what event did you see where they censored the chair shot?
It was a bunch of different ones, like Raw, you know. It was pretty much everyone I looked at. I was like,
oh, my. That is outrageous. That is absolutely outrageous.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Well, Brian, what vintage wrestling matches have you been watching since you've been going back in time?
From the early 90s.
Any favorites? Give me like a favorite 90s. Event or a favorite match that you've had.
Well, I'm just telling you, I saw a bunch of different ones, you know, that I watched, and...
Name one. Give me one, Brian. Give me one.
WrestleMania.
Well, which WrestleMania?
One of the first 10. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Well, Brian, unfortunately, your responses to my line of questioning lead me to think that you've never even seen wrestling. And the fact that you have been unable to name even a single match in spite of repeated opportunities to do so tells me you're lying about everything you say. And I would caution the listeners to take everything Brian just said with a grain of salt. So, I'll tell you what. If you're fed up with censorship in professional wrestling, if you're fed up with losing all your money at the baccarat table, if you're fed up with hyperbolic radio talk show hosts, then you may as well at least have some energy. And that's where Life Change Tea comes in. Life Change Tea is a phenomenal product. It is an all-natural product. It's made with a powerful herbal proprietary formula that gives you more energy without caffeine. Tastes great. No fillers. Completely organic. And if you've ever had a difficult time going to the bathroom, for instance, there are people that might hear Brian, who was unable to name a single wrestling match, in spite of the fact that I asked him not once, not twice, not thrice, but four times. A lot of people might say that Brian is full of it. A lot of people might say he's full of shaving cream. And if you happen to be full of it and you have a difficult time going to the bathroom, Life Change Tea will help you. You will not have a difficult time being regular if you use Life Change Tea. So how do you get it? You go to the website, getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And if you order some and you use the promo code Frank, then you'll get to save all the money on shipping. So go to getthetea.com, order some of this Life Change Tea. Comes in three great flavors. My favorite's the pomegranate. And then if you use the promo code Frank, not only will you get a great product at a great price, but the good folks over at Life Change Tea will know you heard about it on this radio show. The AC Report is next. We'll take a look at some of Atlantic City's history straight ahead.
This is the AC Report.
Well, they blew up the Chicken Man in Philly last night, and they blew up his house too. Down on the boardwalk, they're ready for a fight. Gonna see what them racket boys can do. Now there's trouble bussing in from out of state, and the DA can't get no relief. Gonna be a rumble on the promenade, and the gambling commissioner's hanging on by the skin of his teeth. Everything dies, baby, that's a fact. But maybe everything that dies someday comes back. Put your makeup on, fix your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City.
Time we take a look at things that are happening or involve the city of Atlantic City. There's not a city like Atlantic City in the world, a place that has some of the craziest characters anywhere, a place that's a beach resort that features nine casinos, a place that has tremendous restaurants, a place that offers gaming and nightlife, a place that has the longest boardwalk in America. But by far, the thing that makes Atlantic City so unique and so special, at least in my view, is Atlantic City's history. And we are really, really very lucky this morning to be joined by somebody who has helped chronicle and write so much of Atlantic City's history. She's an Atlantic City historian, a terrific picture editor, curator, an author. She also happens to be the daughter of Al Gold, Atlantic City's first official photographer. Gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome Vicki Gold Levy. Thank you so much, Vicki, for joining me on the radio.
What an incredible introduction. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. I've been eager to talk with you for a long time. I've been a big, big fan of your work. Vicki, for people that aren't familiar with your father, Al Gold, and the role he played in Atlantic City, who exactly was he? What did he do?
Well, he was the first official photographer for the city. And he came to Atlantic City when he was a young man because he had typhoid fever from Philadelphia. And he used to go out to where all the great boxers trained, Gene Tunney and people like that. And he became enamored by the photographers there who were photographing the fighters. And so he made that his profession. And he started with the first Miss America pageant in 1921. And then he went to work for Boardwalk Illustrated News, which was their version of Life magazine. And then in 1939, he became the official photographer of Atlantic City in Convention Hall, which you now know as Boardwalk Hall. And he held that position until his death in 1964. So he photographed all the movie stars and presidents, as well as the locals and the citizens of the town.
Was it your father's influence that led to your interest in chronicling Atlantic City as a historian and as a photo expert and editor?
I didn't know it when he was alive, but I guess it was in my DNA because I was always involved with the hoopla of Atlantic City. I think I emailed you. I had my own radio show at 5, and I was Bess Meyerson's page when she's Miss America, and I was in summer stock. And, you know, I grew up with the feeling of the shore.
How does one get a radio show at 5 years old?
I had a very a mother who was a stage mom, and she saw that I got it. She used my father's entree to get it to me. It's a wonder I grew up normal. But I really have very fond memories of all of it in Atlantic City.
I even wanted
to once ride the high-diving horse, and I came home, and after my mother got up off the floor, my father said, meet me at the pier tomorrow and bring your bathing suit, Steel Pier we're talking about. And I went down there the next day, and he said, I want you to go up and dive without the horse. And I couldn't do that, so that was the end of the story.
So much of the history of Atlantic City and the interest that people have in the history of Atlantic City these last 10 or 15 years has been spurred by the television program Boardwalk Empire with Steve Buscemi. You were actually a consultant on that show, weren't you?
I was for 5 years. It was one of the best experiences I ever had. It was great. Working with that show and the writers and the different departments, it was a great experience. And when I went on the boardwalk, which was actually in Brooklyn and Greenpoint, it looked exactly like old Atlantic City. They did the most amazing production job. It was incredible.
I would watch that show, and I watched it recently after it was off the air with my wife. And, you know, we go to Atlantic City fairly regularly. And we were both amazed that it was Brooklyn because the recreation, as you say, of the boardwalk, it looks exactly like Atlantic City.
Well, you know, also they used, I'm probably going to say it wrong, CIG, you know, the green.
All right,
screen.
CGI, computer generated.
Sorry,
imaging.
Yeah, I knew
sure.
I would have it.
Close enough, you had the right letters. I figured out what
right.
you meant.
Right. Anyhow, because really there was no water there. There was nothing like that. The pier didn't extend. That was all done with the magic of technology.
And if you were talking to somebody about Atlantic City, would you say Boardwalk Empire is a pretty true-to-life historical representation of what life was like in the 20s in Atlantic City?
A lot of it, yes. I mean, we were always careful to say it was historical fiction, but the basic truth, you know, Atlantic City was famous for its beach, its boardwalk, its amusements, but also during Prohibition, everybody turned a blind eye, you know. We had some raids and things, but really you could get a drink in Atlantic City. So that was really true. There wasn't a Nucky Johns. There wasn't – what was his name in the show?
On the show, it was Nucky Thompson.
Thompson. Wait, it was Nucky Johnson in real life. I met him when I was a little girl, and he was a real character. And most of the people in the show – who were famous were real characters. I mean, Sophie Tucker sang there. She saw her name up in lights for the first time at the Criterion Theater. And a lot of the different actors that portrayed some of the characters in the show actually happened, yes.
We're talking with Vicki Gold-Levy. She is an Atlantic City historian. She's written some terrific books, including Atlantic City, 125 Years of Ocean Madness, which if you're interested in the history of Atlantic City or if you're interested in seeing some great photos, it's definitely a book worth picking up. Vicki, you are, from what I understand, the brains behind the Atlantic City experience at Boardwalk Hall. I absolutely love the Atlantic City experience, and the last 2 years, whenever people would go, I would tell them that's what they should check out. And during COVID, it's been very frustrating to see people not be able to go and enjoy it. For folks unfamiliar with the Atlantic City experience, what is it exactly?
Well, first of all, we used to have a museum that I co-founded on Garden Pier for 35 years. But then one of the casino owners bought the Garden Pier, and he never did anything with it. It's just sitting there. So we had given the museum to the auspices of the Atlantic City Free Public Library. So this new exhibit, which I was able to curate with Heather Perez, it sits in the lobby of Boardwalk Hall, the old convention hall, and the Atlantic City Free Public Library are the guardians of it, so to speak. And it's a wonderful exhibit. I worked on it with a New York design team that does a lot of museums, and it has video and music and costumes and artifacts and pictures, and, you know, it's quite – did you go with Mike Lopez to see it?
I've been there multiple times, so
yeah, well,
I'm sure
I'm
at least one
–
at least one time I'm sure I've been with AC Mike because we like to stroll the boardwalk together.
Yeah, my buddy. But you know, it's been closed because of COVID, and I hope it will open this summer. But the hall is under, you know, New Jersey state guidelines, and so they did have the basketball March Madness there or something.
Yeah.
But it was very limited audience. You know,
yeah, it's very frustrating for me not to be able to send people there because it's just a terrific exhibit, and I hope when things do reopen, people will check it out. Tell me about your book, Atlantic City: 125 Years of Ocean Madness. What's this book all about?
Well, it's out of print now, although you can still get it on eBay, and you can still get it at Amazon, but you have to buy a used copy
right.
or something. It went through about 10 printings, and it was the first sort of Bible of Atlantic City of its time. Now there's been a lot of things to follow it up. And I did it with Lee Eisenberg, who was the editor of Esquire magazine, so it's incredibly written. And everybody opened up their archives to me, pictures to me. You know, they were in my father's memory. The book is dedicated to him. I was able to, you know, really get a lot of wonderful pictures. A lot of things that today wouldn't fly, like, for example, the high-diving horse or the boxing cats or the midget boxers. You know, they're a little bit not so PC. But it's the history, so it's important to show how gaudy and wonderful and bizarre and
right.
fantastical Atlantic City really was.
You didn't go back and censor these images and pretend there wasn't a diving horse and, you know, little people boxing with one another. These were the images, and you actually showed history as it happened.
The book was done in 1979, but if I was going to do it again today, I would still show it.
Yes. Wonderful. Well, that's what we like to hear. Now, Vicki, it is interesting. We're talking to you right now, New Yorker to New Yorker. You're in New York City now.
I am.
Why are you not residing in Atlantic City, the city that that you, your father and you have given so much to? How come you're in New York these days?
Because I came up to New York right after college to study acting and et cetera, and then I met my husband, and I'm married, and he's a clinical psychologist with a full practice here, and I love New York too. I'm hoping it'll come back with a bang.
Same here.
I'm on a lot of boards in Atlantic City. I'm on the board of Blue City Elephant, and on the board, you know, Convention Hall Board will call now, houses the world's largest pipe organ, the Mid-Mer Loge pipe organ, with over 34,000 pipes. And I'm a trustee of the pipe organ. And I'm on the Atlantic City Free Public Library Foundation Committee that oversees the museum. And I speak at Stockton University. So I have my foot in Atlantic City. I'm also involved with Steel Pier, which is a wonderful place to go and visit today, even though it's not the old Steel Pier. It's the new Steel Pier with lots of things that
sure.
you can see. And so I have, you know, my heart is still in Atlantic City, and it's had some difficult times through COVID, but it's still hanging in there. And it'll come back as soon as maybe this summer.
I hope so. I'm rooting for it.
We have new beaches, you know. We have expanded beaches. I want to tell everybody, if you want to find out what's happening in Atlantic City, there's two good email websites. One is Do Atlantic City, spell it out, doatlanticcity.com, tells you everything that's going on, and also steelpier.com, because that's a big attraction.
And in terms of the, you know, you get back to Atlantic City fairly regularly, it sounds
well,
like.
Well, I haven't during the pandemic, but I will plan to again, of course.
So if you were to describe Atlantic City to someone that's never been there, and we have listeners all over the country now, and even listeners in Canada, if you were to describe Atlantic City to someone that's never been there, how would you describe it? How would you explain it?
Well, it's kind of a mixed bag. The boardwalk is really the artery of the town. You know, it's the boardwalk, and we have the rolling chairs on the boardwalk and the beach and the ocean. They're the natural attributes of the city. And then there are the pockets of entertainment. You know, you can eat really well in Atlantic City, I want to tell you. The food is really good.
Oh, that's for sure.
Great restaurants. You have the Tangiers shopping, one of the largest Tangiers shopping centers. You have a lot of people don't know this. You have a lot of fishing and parasailing water sports and down in the Back Bay area and cruises. There's a lot going on in that area that a lot of people aren't familiar with.
Now, In terms of how Atlantic City has changed, either from the time you were a little girl hosting radio shows and running around with Nucky Johnson, or even to since 1977 when they first legalized gambling, how would you say Atlantic City's changed over the course of the last 50 years?
It's important to go back in time. During World War II, Atlantic City was totally taken over by the Army Air Force. Did you know that?
I did, but I think most people probably didn't.
Well, all the hotels were barracks, and the convention hall became a training center. And what's now known as resorts was originally Haddon Hall, and at that time it was taken over by the Thomas England General Hospital, where all the rest and recuperation soldiers came, a lot of amputees, a lot of wheelchairs. So after the hotels had been so taken over, it was sort of hard to come back to its full glory as before. So when the 1964 Democratic Convention was held in Atlantic City, a lot of reporters were down there saying, it's shoddy. Will the last person turn off the light when they leave the town? You know, it's sort of got a sully reputation. So it wasn't until the casino referendum that it started to get the glory back again. I mean, they always say Atlantic City's like the phoenix rising, you know. And so it has a lot of sore spots that need to be worked on, but it also has a lot of beauty. The boardwalk, the beach, the casinos. I mean, the Ocean Casino, the Hard Rock, they're spectacular. Steel Pier. So it's a mixed bag. It has its pockets of that are kind of disheveled, but it also has so much to do, so much to do and eat and see and go to. And, you know, the lighthouse has got the tallest lighthouse in New Jersey, the organs, the hall. It's a work in progress, but the casinos have made a tremendous difference, I think.
Yeah, no, I would certainly agree with you. Now, you mentioned the ocean. Apparently, there's this new hedge fund, this group, the Illich organization.
Oh,
which
they
is based,
bought into the ocean.
Right,
the ocean
they bought half the ocean. I think they own a lot of stuff in Detroit, like different sports.
Yeah, they own the Detroit casino, too. I just read about it.
Yeah, so what does that mean in terms of operationally anything different that'll happen at the ocean as far as you know?
I don't know, actually. I'm an observer, but I'm not involved in day-to-day life. I mean, the ocean, to me, is the most beautiful casino in Atlantic City. I really love it. The Hard Rock is exciting. You know, it's always happening. I hear there's going to be a giant water park built in Atlantic City very soon.
Fingers crossed. I'm looking forward to it. Now, if you were to look, Vicki, at areas at Atlantic City's future, let's say. I know history is more your bailiwick as opposed to...
No, but I keep up with what's going on as well.
So would you be optimistic about Atlantic City's future right now, or do you think Atlantic City's best days are behind it?
No, I think... Well, it has some pretty good days behind it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be sure that you continue that. A lot is going to be told after this summer. I mean, it's still an incredible place to live. There's apartment buildings that are right on the boardwalk with the Ocean Club and others that where you go more into Ventnor. But it has to be a city that fulfills a lot of aspirations, a lot of equality, a lot of opportunity. It has to work for everybody. And I think it has a good future because of location, location, location. I mean, where do you find beaches like that and water like that and amenities like
right.
that?
Nowhere on earth. Nowhere on right. earth, Vicki. Vicki, so, this has been a lot of fun.
I still have what you call sand in my shoes.
You and me both. Vicki, hopefully we'll get you in studio sometime soon. Hopefully I'll see you on the boardwalk sometime soon.
I would look forward to that, and thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Vicki Gold-Levy, you can check her out online. Her book's out of print, but if you want to Google her, it's Vicki Gold, L-E-V-I, and there's a ton of interesting stuff that you'll find about her. You could search that on Amazon if you want to pick up a used copy of the book. You want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you're welcome to do so. 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
I shouldn't have had the last cup of coffee. That's the cup that's gonna keep me awake. Still
Cocaine up late's my addiction, a habit I don't wanna break. I'm a fool for a black and white movie with a detective whose goose gets cooked. A little flick on long after midnight with just enough romance to get me hooked. I'm an insomniac. I come alive when the straights all sleep. I plead guilty, Jack, to the crime of never counting a sheep.
Marilyn Harris singing when the Insomniac. This is the other side of midnight. If you're an insomniac, I appreciate you listening to me and spending your mornings with me. If you find yourself awake unexpectedly, if you've just stumbled upon our little program, we are live, we're local, we're New York's only live and local radio talk show, mainstream radio talk show. In fact, I think this is the only live and local mainstream radio talk show in America at this juncture. There might be one in Ohio. But I heard that that was taken off. So I'm not, don't quote me on that, but I think that's the case. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Want to wish a happy 21st birthday to our telephone talent coordinator, Gabby, who is not here today. But in her stead, we have Molly, who is phone screening for the very first time. Molly, how are you enjoying your experience here thus far?
Very good. Enjoying it very much. Love working at WABC. Everybody's really nice. And I'm having a great time.
Well, that's not necessarily a positive experience about this show in particular. That's more of a positive experience about the radio station as a whole. What are your takeaways about working on this show in particular?
I have to say the callers on this show in particular have had a lot of great energy. So high energy in the audience tonight. So thank you, Frank, for keeping everybody up and ready to go.
Well, thank you, Molly. And we also have Matt, who is training to take over for Christian. Christian is getting ready to go on, one of his benders somewhere. We don't know, to parts unknown. Matt, you are doing a pretty good job from what I can tell so far.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Glad to be back.
It's great to have you back. See, unlike that guy who was here yesterday, that guy Eric, I feel like you kind of get the rhythm of this show.
Yeah, I've done this show enough times that I know the rhythm of it. I'm relatively new as well, but I got the hang of things.
Yeah, that guy Eric is unflappable. God bless him. I mean, if he doesn't make it in radio, he could be a butler somewhere. You know, he's unflappable. All right, 800-848-9222 if you want to talk to Molly or talk to me. Rola is calling from New Jersey. Hello, Rola.
Hey, Molly's got the sexiest voice on the radio at this time of the day, just for the record.
Well, let's behave ourselves, Rola.
Atlantic City is a crap hole. We all know that. So I don't know what that lady's talking about. She don't even live there. She don't even want to go there. She said she hasn't been back there in a while. How come we don't have casinos up in the Meadowlands or North Jersey? You know, everybody's got to travel all the way down, waste gas, down to Atlantic City, and you can't even, you're taking your life in your hands. Going near Atlantic Avenue at 12 o'clock in the afternoon.
First of all, let me answer the second part of what you said first. The reason there's no casinos at the Meadowlands or in North Jersey is because the people of New Jersey voted it down. They had a proposal, and they voted it down.
Okay, but I don't believe that. I believe that the politicians in the Philadelphia mob don't want it. And, you know, like Nick Sacco from, Hudson County, he proposed it a couple years ago. Then all of a sudden, oh, he changed my mind. Did he get his hand greased? You know, Atlantic City's been paying politicians off and Donald
Trump. Well, that's true. Look, even the last two mayors are
exactly.
Well, the last mayor and the one, not the one immediately before him, but the one before him. You're exactly right on that front. I completely disagree with your characterization of Atlantic City as a crap hole. There are some rough neighborhoods. Absolutely. You know where else there are some rough neighborhoods? New York City. You walk around New York. There are parts of New York. There are subway stations in New York that I feel less safe than when I walk on Atlantic or Pacific or on the boardwalk. Are there some characters there? Yeah. Is there some drug use in Atlantic City? Absolutely. Are there some things that need to be fixed? 100%. I can tell you in my case, I feel safe walking around Atlantic City, especially the closer you are to the water, the safer you tend to be. But you know what? If you don't want to go, don't go. Live vicariously through this radio show. Until next hour, your influence counts, so use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morrow, everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight. You know, I'm in the midst of committing a very big mistake. So I was, I'm already pretty energetic. I had two cups of coffee already. For a while I was doing this show not drinking any coffee. And lately I've been allowing myself one cup a day. But I'm so enjoying drinking coffee again. And Carol Alt sort of had me off coffee for a while. And I was limiting myself to largely one cup a week. And then I was up to one cup a night. Now, I just poured myself my third cup of coffee, which on the one hand guarantees that I will not fall asleep while driving. But on the other hand, it guarantees that I'm going to have a difficult time falling asleep when I get home. So I'm treating myself to a third cup of coffee. I'm not going to do this again tomorrow. I'm going to limit myself to one per day, so I don't get all hyped up and crazy. 800-848-WABC if you want to comment on anything we're covering. Hey, so a friend of mine came to visit me yesterday. And he's a friend of mine that runs a very large organization. I don't want to get into the details, but it's a nonprofit organization. I'll say that. And he had a woman who worked for him who is 38 years old or thereabouts. 38 years old, maybe 37. And a few months ago, she's driving, a work-related activity. She's driving. And she suffers a massive stroke while driving. And from what I understand, she is still in the hospital and largely incapacitated. And this prompted a whole big discussion among his staff over what becomes of this woman's husband. She's married to a 35-year-old man. Now, I don't think she's in a coma. I don't know the specifics of her medical status. But from what I understand, she's in the hospital and largely incapacitated. She's married to a 35-year-old man. What is this man to do? If she's never the same again, and the effects of this massive stroke leave her permanently incapacitated, what is she to do? And what is he to do? And what would you do? Let's say your husband or your wife suffered a medical issue. Maybe it's a coma. Maybe it's something else. And it's clear that while they will be living, they will never be able to function as a fully functioning human being again. Maybe it's a permanent vegetative state. Maybe it's a coma. Maybe it's permanent brain damage that requires round-the-clock hospitalization. If you're that person's husband or wife, how long do you wait before you start pursuing other romantic interests? Particularly if you're a 35-year-old man and maybe you had hopes of starting a family. Are you to take that till death do us part vow literally? Are you to take it to the grave? Your wife is in a coma, let's say. She may never come out. And are you supposed to, at 35, never take romantic companionship again? 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. That is the question.
A question. Since before your sun burned hot in space and before your race was born, I have awaited a question.
And if something happens to your spouse, does it depend on what the medical issue is? I mean, do you wait one length of time if it's a coma? Do you wait another length of time if somebody's able to speak, but they're permanently bedridden? Do you wait another length of time if someone is permanently wheelchair bound? Let's say it's your husband and they have a horse riding accident and they're a paraplegic or a quadriplegic. They're paralyzed from the waist down or from the neck down. Does that mean you should never romantically be with another man again? If that was your spouse, how long would you wait? Coma, bedridden, paralysis, any of those three. How long do you wait? 800-848-9222. Because my friend was telling me that in his office, in part because they knew this woman, the whole office started weighing in on this question. And there was a significant divide among gender. Women thought one thing, men thought another. There was also a significant divide among age. Young people thought one thing, older people thought another. What do you think? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. How long do you wait if your spouse has a significant medical issue? A week? A month? 6 months? A year? 2 years? 5 years? 10 years? Forever. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Kevin in New Jersey. Hello, Kevin.
Yeah, Frank. How you doing? I actually lived this. I actually lived this this type of situation. My mom and my dad. My mom was in an accident at 29 years old, and she was paralyzed. She was quadriplegic. And my father was 35, the same age as this gentleman. And they pretty much gave up on her that night because she was in such bad shape. She was actually hit by a car. She was hit by a drunk driver.
Oh, my.
And yeah, and it was really bad. And my father begged them to save her for the kids. There were seven of us. There were seven kids. So he begged and pleaded with the doctors at the hospital to save her. They did the tracheotomy and all that. She lost her voice because of it, but they saved her. She lived.
Thank goodness.
Yes, absolutely. And she lived that way for 18 years. So she got to see us all grow up. You know, my oldest brother was only 11 at the time, and the youngest was 3. So, you know, she got to see us all grow. She got to see some of her grandkids born. But my father never really had a relationship. I mean, she was in Kessler Institute for 2 years after that. Then she was in a nursing home for years following that. So he didn't really have much of an opportunity to. But then we all got back together. We all went into foster care and orphanages and stuff. It was crazy, crazy story. But he wound up getting us all back one by one, and he actually got my mom back. She actually came to live with us in our house. So they didn't have so much of a relationship, but she was with us at least for about 2 years because she really needed a lot of care.
Sure.
So she wound up back in a nursing home, but you know, they never really had a relationship again after that.
So it is, that is an interesting circumstance. First of all, I can't imagine how difficult that must have been, not only on both of your parents, but on all seven of you. And it, I imagine you're a pretty tough family to be able to go through that and make it, you know, make it to the other end. But so when your mom had her incident, let's say, how old was your father at the time?
35.
So
yes.
your dad pretty much went the rest of his life, as far as you know anyway, without any sort of female companionship?
Well, never any, you know, permanent type companionship. He, you know, he had women that he, you know, saw here and there over the years, but never again.
While your mom was alive?
Correct. And even now, today, he's still alive. My dad's 80, and he's never had any serious relationship with a woman after that.
Well, no, but so I understand. So my question really, Kevin, is if you're in your dad's shoes, right, and your spouse is never able to be intimate with you, let's say, how long do you wait before you pursue other romantic interests?
Wow, that's a tough question, to be honest with you, Frank. I love my wife so much. I don't know if I could answer that. I really don't.
Well, this is the show where we ask the tough questions, Kevin.
Yeah, you really do, Frank. Let me tell you, you have a great show, man. You keep me interested all night. I have a bread route. I'm out all night driving, and you keep me up. You keep me interested, laughing, thinking. Your show is brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Well, thank you, Kevin. That's very nice of you. I appreciate that. I'll try not to do anything in the next 45 minutes that makes you think differently. I appreciate it. Hey, best of luck. Call again. And again, I'm sorry your family had to go through all that, but I'm glad your dad fought so hard to get all of you out of foster care. And I'm glad you're doing well.
And we became much stronger because we're really, really close because we were all taken away from each other at such a young age.
I can imagine. You know, I can imagine.
We are now.
Well, yeah, good for you, absolutely. Kevin. Kevin, thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. 800-848-9222. That's the question we're asking. You're a 35-year-old man. Your wife enters into a coma. How long are you supposed to wait before you get a girlfriend or before you do something with another woman? A week? A month? 6 months? A year? 5 years? Forever. 800-848-9222. And same thing if the genders are reversed. 800-848-9222. This is something that people often don't think about until it's too late. Well, now I'm asking you to think about it. 1-800-848-9222. I do also want to ask you to think about listening to my friend Joe Piscopo on Sundays with Sinatra. Ramsey Mazda's Sundays with Sinatra is a terrific show. I worked with Joe Piscopo for 6 years every day, and I can tell you a lot of people think that he thinks he is Frank Sinatra. And you can understand why. It's a very popular show. They've actually added another hour to it. It's now on from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. And it's a great way to wrap up your weekend with the best music ever from the chairman of the board, Frank Sinatra, and Joe Piscopo. Joe knows all sorts of stories about Sinatra. He sings the Sinatra songs. He's got all sorts of interesting guests on that show. So if you haven't checked out the show yet, I do recommend it. It's a fine, fine show. 800-848-9222 if you want to weigh in on this question that we're facing. Now, if you are somebody that deals with folks that are incapacitated, perhaps that means you're a healthcare worker, a nurse, a doctor. If that's the case, especially during the COVID era, it may mean that you wear a mask all day long. Now, if you wear a mask all day long, that is so incredibly uncomfortable. And unfortunately, a lot of us have to wear masks at work and all day long and doing whatever we do. And that's where the EZ-Flow USA air filtration system comes in. You can go to easyflowusa.com for more details. That's EASY Flow, FLOW, USA.com. And what it does is it pushes fresh, filtered air directly into your mask, allowing you to breathe normally and more comfortably. It protects you from contaminated air entering from gaps, and it's recommended by medical professionals everywhere. It makes your mask more effective. It blocks 99.7% of virus and bacteria. More important from where I'm standing is if you work in an office where they make you wear a mask, whether you've been vaccinated or not, it makes your mask more comfortable. You're actually able to breathe. You're not sitting here laboring. You actually have this fresh flow of air shooting directly into your mask. It's wonderful. So if you want to try this, get yours today by going to easyflowusa.com. That's EASYFLOWUSA.com and enter the promo code Frank. If you do that, you're going to save 15% off when you purchase. EasyFlowUSA.com, promo code Frank. 800-848-9222. How long do you wait if your wife's in a coma? Your answers next.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
I'm a fool to want you. I'm a fool to want you. To want a love that can't be true. A love that's there. Such a fool to hold you, to seek a kiss not mine alone, to share a kiss the devil has known.
The great Frank Sinatra, I'm a fool to want you. Well, are you a fool? If you're married, you're in the midst of a happy marriage, maybe you're just starting out, you're 35, 36, 37, your wife's around the same age, and all of a sudden, she suffers a medical issue, and she's now in a coma. They're not sure if she'll ever wake up, she'll ever come out of that coma. If she does come out of the coma, doctors tell you that she has such reduced brain activity, she may never be the same again. How long do you wait before moving on romantically? 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Want to encourage everybody to join our Facebook group. If you're listening to us, just go on Facebook and type Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. People are giving rave reviews to the 2 hours that we spent with Joe Piscopo. I'm thinking of Sinatra now and Sundays with Sinatra. The 2 hours that we spent with Doug McIntyre. So if you want to weigh in, whether you liked it, whether you didn't like it, as long as you listen to the show, you're welcome to comment. Just go on to Facebook, Morano Radio Fans and Haters. We are closing in on the same number of people in this Facebook group that Bernie and Sid, that are in the Bernie and Sid Facebook group. So that's nice. We want to encourage everybody to join Morano Radio Fans and Haters. 800-848-9222. Ron is in Monmouth County. Hello, Ron.
Good morning. Yes, I have my philosophy and answer for you. Relationships are about trust, being open and honest. So how long one waits can be 1 minute or forever. To thine own self be true. One could seek another romantic relationship and be open and honest about the situation. Mary, my wife is in a coma. It may be a day, it may be forever. I'll keep you fully informed about what's going on, but I want to be in love. I want a mutual relationship. So, in other words, here's the deal. I will move on. If things change, you'll have to be open to that possibility, and so will I.
So
as long as one is open and honest.
So in your case, Ron, and I agree with everything you said on openness and honesty, in your case, How long is that? Is it a minute, a month, a day?
Exactly. Time is irrelevant. It's about telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and then
I'm not
you make your decision.
I'm not disputing that, Ron, but in your case, to thine own self be true, to yourself be true, what length of time do you think is sufficient?
It's not about time. It's about coming to a decision.
Well, I'm asking you to make it about time, Ron. I mean, that's kind of the point of the exercise here. How long should this guy, who's 35 years old, whose wife just suffered a stroke, and who may never be the same, how long should he wait? That's the question. 800-848-9222. Francis is in Brooklyn. Hello, Francis.
Hi, yes. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thanks.
Good. I don't think it's right, because when you make your vows, for better or worse, so that's do your part. And I think you should be with your wife until God says it's over. And no, I don't think it's right. You should love your wife. And I sure that a lot of men have mistresses on the side, and I've seen this in funerals, and they have their girl, they crying and all this, and their mistress is right there in the funeral. And it's to me, it's not right.
Well, no, I don't think it's right either. But I'm wondering, so if you're a 35-year-old guy and you'd hoped to have children one day, and you're madly in love with your wife, but she goes into a coma and the doctors tell you she may never come out. Are you supposed to give up on your dream of having a family?
Well, then, if you're a religious person in any religion, you should wait. See, I'm old school. I believe you should wait, even though if she doesn't get out of coma, eventually she's going to pass on.
Right, but so wait potentially forever.
Yes.
All right. Well,
me, I would do it. If I love this woman at the bottom of my heart, you know.
Are you married now, Francis?
You know, excuse me, sir?
Are you married now?
No, I'm separated.
Oh, you're separated.
I'm separated.
Well, you think your wife missed out there. It sounds like you were quite a catch. 800-848-WABC. Francis says, wait. No matter how long it takes, what do you think? 800-848-9222. Hey, want to encourage people to subscribe to the podcast. You can find us wherever podcasts are available. Just search The Other Side of Midnight. That's The Other Side of Midnight on Pandora or Spotify or anywhere podcasts are available. And then press the subscribe button. You can also just go to the website fmwabc.com. FM, Frank Moreno, fmwabc.com. And that'll take you right to the podcast page if you ever miss this show. 800-848-9222. Jeff is in the Bronx. Jeff, what do you think about all this?
Ditto what Francis just said, man. You made a vow.
So no matter how long it takes, if she's in a coma, you got to wait no matter what.
You made a vow. I mean, my wife's got some medical problems, and it ain't been happening.
Jeff, you got cut off there a second. Repeat your last sentence, please.
I said my wife's got a medical problem, and we ain't been having regular for like 2 years, but I made a vow to stay with the rest of my life.
Well, I think that's very admirable, Jeff, and your wife's a very lucky woman, and I hope her medical status improves. I want to be clear, though. I'm not talking about a headache or a hangnail or endometriosis or scoliosis or psoriasis. I'm talking about a coma. Not only is she not able to do her wifely duties, she can't even have a conversation. I mean, there's very little brain activity. Doctors say she's never going to wake up, maybe never. And if she does wake up, she's going to be a shell of her former self. She may not even recognize you. And you still think, forever.
Vow is till death do us part.
God bless you, Jeff. God bless you. I agree that's the vow. And I'd like to think I'd be just as true to my wife as Jeff would be to his and Francis would be to his. Although I will point out that Francis is separated. Perhaps he's separated for a reason. Who knows? But I don't know. If the doctor said to me, sir, your wife is in a coma. We don't know if she's ever going to come out. And we're seeing such little brain activity in her brain that if she does come out, she won't be the same woman. She won't recognize you. She probably won't even know her own name. She may not even be able to communicate. You're supposed to wait forever? I don't know. I don't know if I could do that. I'll be very honest. And I that's why I wait till the 4 o'clock hour to have these conversations, because my wife usually doesn't make it this far to the show when she listens on the podcast. She usually stops like 2:33. Hopefully this isn't one of those shows where she gets up early and gets a head start on the podcast. So we'll see. 800-848-9222. Michael in Bethlehem, PA. Hello.
Hello, Frank. Good morning. You ask a very powerful and important question, and as a chaplain, I can answer the question very simply. There's two sides to the ethical dilemma. The faith-based side of the coin is you've made a covenant relationship with your husband or your wife, so you stay with them consistent with your vow. The other side is the subjective. Depends on how I feel. Depends on what the doctors say. I don't know relationships that last through the turmoils of life that are not values-based. So if an individual gets into a marriage and they're values-based and their value is until death do they part, as we used to say in the military, Frank, you man up and you do what you have to do. That's real love. That's my opinion.
Well, no, I respect that. And apparently that is the consensus. That's what everybody seems to be saying. And as tough as it might be, I guess that's maybe the only answer here. And I appreciate that, Michael. When I'm out in Bethlehem and I visit my cousins, maybe I'll run into you at that club they all hang out at, or at the Apollo Grill. There's one other place in Bethlehem. Should have asked Michael before I disconnected him. One other place in Bethlehem, there's a nice outdoor bar that has, you know, nice drinks and stuff. I don't remember the name of it. 800-848-WABC. Joe is on the New Jersey Turnpike. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for having me on. Great show. Love it. Keeps me going.
Thank you.
So listen, Frank, I watched this firsthand. It was my uncle, my mother's brother. And that's how they met. My father and my uncle were in Korea together. My father pulled my uncle back in. He brought her home to show the family, and my mother and father got married, and that was that. But anyway, I watched my uncle, his poor wife, suffered from brain cancer. And I watched this when I was growing up. And he took care of her. Frank got to the point she didn't recognize anybody. She was and he had some time, but I respect that guy so much. And when he passed away, God, Frank, there was hundreds of people. He was that kind of a stand-up guy, and I commend him for it. And as you get older, you really realize what the trauma and what he went through. And I say it's really wild. But, Frank, besides all, I just want to say maybe it's just a time frame. I haven't heard any women on the show talking. I hear the men.
You know, you're right. I was wondering the same thing. I was wondering the same thing, Joe. And we have a lot of female listeners, and I'm wondering the same thing. First of all,
hear any women trying to save the men. I don't hear that.
Yeah. You're right, Joe. I don't. Maybe they want the men to stay in that coma. That's what it sounds like. Thank you. 800-848-9222. Somebody commenting in the Facebook group, Frank Morano, it's a really sick exercise to wonder how long you should wait while your spouse is in a coma to start dating again. What's wrong with you? Well, the reason that this came up is because there is a very real couple dealing with this very same question. And he was seeking counsel from his coworkers. And the coworkers had varying views. And I'm curious what your view is. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800. 848-WABC. We'll continue with your calls next. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
to learn. Go on, teach me tonight. Starting with the ABC of it.
Help me solve the mystery of it. That's Amy Winehouse singing Teach Me Tonight, an incredible talent taken from us way too soon, and someone whose life was very plagued by addiction and substance abuse, and certainly a cautionary tale to see someone with that much talent and that much promise wasted before our very eyes. 800-848-WABC. If your wife or your husband has a medical issue, a serious medical issue, something along the lines of a coma, and it's not clear whether they're ever coming out, how long do you wait before you seek other companionship? So far, most of the people we've heard from, all fellas, by the way, say you wait forever. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to, you know, by the way, I am reminded of that episode of Seinfeld where Jerry's neighbor up the hallway, Martin, or as they call him in the episode, Martin, is in a coma, and his girlfriend Gina is trying to get a little cozy with Jerry, and Jerry's trying to evaluate this ethically, and who does he turn to? Who would you turn to if you needed a little wisdom in your life? Of course, he turned to Kramer.
So what's going on between you and Gina?
Well, I went with her to the hospital last night. Huh? So we're in the room, and she's trying to get me to kiss her right in front of her.
Uh-huh. See, that's the great thing about Mediterranean women. All right, so what'd you do?
Nothing.
What kind of a man are you? The guy is unconscious in a coma, and you don't have the guts to kiss his girlfriend?
I didn't know what the coma etiquette was.
There is no coma etiquette. See, that's the beauty of the coma, man. It doesn't matter what you do around him.
So you're saying his girl, his car, his clothes, it's all up for grabs. You can just loot the coma victim.
I give him 24 hours to get out of it. If they can't get out of it by 24 hours, it's a land rush.
So if the coma victim wakes up in a month, he's thrilled. He got out of the coma. He goes home, there's nothing left?
Nothing left. That's why I'm trying to get that vacuum cleaner, because somebody's going to grab it.
What say you? 1-800-848-WABC. You agree with Kramer? You agree with the fellows that we've heard from so far? Abigail in New Jersey, hello.
Good morning. Good morning, Frank. Welcome back from Las Vegas.
Thank you.
And I'm having trouble sleeping ever since I took Moderna, too. And so you've filled that gap of emptiness in my soul.
Well, wonderful. I have to thank the good folks over at Moderna for getting us at least one new listener.
Yes. Unfortunately, I lost my mom last week.
Sorry to hear that.
Yes, and we put her to rest on Friday, Good Friday. We're a Jewish family, and I just wanted to say that my ex-husband was present. We made an arrangement, a legal arrangement, that he could attend because he and my late mom were my two enemies, and I have to tell you that I conducted the service. I told you my mother was my enemy and my ex-husband, but I made peace. I read a beautiful poem, A Pinch of Peace. I honored her, and it was a beautiful service. And at the end of the service, my dad was a watch executive. The end of the service at 12:30, my watch stopped.
Oh.
And the messages that my father was sending me were twofold. One, thanks for bringing the love of my life back. I missed her for 10 years because obviously he died 10 years ago. They're now next to each other. And the other message was, watch your back. And do you know that the family stole all the jewelry that my mother left for me. My father was in the jewelry business. They got the Saturday after we put mom to rest, and my ex-husband was at the jewelry party with my family, and I was excluded, and
oh,
I was
my.
The only daughter.
Well, that's,
so
that's...
I have to make peace. I have to make peace with the enemies, and my father was sending me a message, watch your back.
Well,
boy, was he right.
Clearly, Abigail, and I'm sorry you went through that. And
my dad, again, was the watch executive.
Yeah,
I
no,
had three witnesses.
Right, I believe you. I believe you, Abigail. I believe you completely, and I'm sorry you went through that. I don't think it's relevant at all to the subject that we're discussing, but it's still pretty tragic nonetheless that you have your mom as an enemy and your ex-husband as an enemy and the jewelry gets robbed from you. I got to be honest. I know everybody says this. But if I'm very blessed to have both my parents still. But if either of my parents died, I would not care in the least if they didn't leave me anything. I mean, are there little mementos that have sentimental value that I would really like? Probably, yeah. But if they didn't leave me anything, I, especially in my dad's case, I have three half-siblings that are also his children. If he decided I'm leaving everything I own to my other three children, Frank's on his own, I wouldn't care a lick. I would only be upset that my parents had died. But that's just me. I guess a lot of people say that and then other emotions take fold. Hey, speaking of parents and children, it is apparently looking like a possibility that Andrew Giuliani may run for governor of New York. Now, he had mused about potentially running for mayor of New York City this year. Ultimately, he decided not to. He went to go work for Newsmax instead. And now Andrew Giuliani, is telling people that he is seriously considering a run for governor in 2022. And he even spoke with President Trump earlier this week about it. He told Politico, I did speak with President Trump on Monday, and it was a great conversation. We talked about New York politics and went through the numbers on this, and I explained to him where I think I would be able to make inroads that no other potential candidate would be able to. What do you think? Would you vote for Andrew Cuomo for governor of New York? 800-848-9222. He did work in the Trump administration. And I know some people will say, well, he never held elective office before. You know who else never held elective office before he ran for governor of New York? Andrew Cuomo. That's right. He ran in 02, ran against Carl McCall and lost. Then came back 4 years later and ran for attorney general. You know, if I were Andrew Cuomo, I would run for Congress instead in a district that's currently represented by a Democrat that has voted Republican before, like Sean Patrick Maloney's district in the Hudson Valley, or Kathleen Rice's district out on Long Island, or Tom Suozzi's district out on Long Island. One of those districts that's represented by a Democrat that is sort of a purple district. That's where I'd start. And then if you win in a district like that, then maybe you proved yourself worthy of being able to run statewide. What do you think? Would you vote for Andrew Giuliani? 800-848-9222. Any other subject is fair game as well. GT is calling from Manhattan. Hello, GT.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I have a complaint. Your program is too good. I'm almost 90 years old, and I should be asleep. And I've gone from Vicky Gold, Levy, the wrestlers, the poor lady with her mother. I want to talk about everything. I'll try to talk fast. One thing, I hope Mrs. Moreno is awake, because she's going to get after you when you get home.
Well, in fairness,
You're heavy on a wife in a coma. Ask Mrs. Moreno what she should do if, God forbid, that happened to you, would you want her to skip right out and get some other dude?
Well, I'd hope she'd wait a week or two, GT. And in fairness, because this was a subject that came over when my friend was discussing his coworker, she did weigh in on this as well. And we did discuss this prior to me bringing it up on the radio. And
Listen.
Go ahead.
I went through a situation with a husband who was disabled for quite a few years. I agree with the people. When you get married, you say certain vows. You agree to those vows. Why have them if you're going to have the discussion when something happens? You do what you have to do, and you work your life out as best you can. The person in the coma, you've got to take care of them. You've got to change certain things in your life. You're not going to worry about running out with somebody else right away. That's not even
again,
an issue.
Again.
It would be like saying if you had a disabled child, what are you going to do? Immediately stick them in an institution?
No.
Or you're going to keep that kid at home and try to do what you can do?
I am not saying right away at all. I'm asking what amount of time is appropriate and respectful, if any.
You can't set a time. The chaplain and the other men, they had the right idea. You would be dealing with the situation, and you work any other side of your life, recreation and so forth, you'd work that out as you go along after a period of making sure that you're taking care of that person that needs you. And it's very interesting that you were very heavy on if something happens to a guy, I mean to the wife, it can happen to the guy.
Of course,
Suppose
it does happen.
The guy at 35 had an accident and could no longer be conscious.
Agreed.
What would you think of the wife be thinking of, oh, well, let's see how long I'll wait I go get a boyfriend?
It
doesn't work that way.
Well, no, but, I mean, and thank you, GTA.
And that man that went to the office asking his coworkers, what is wrong with him?
Well, I can't speak to that, GT. Thank you, GT. Look, I would hope if I'm in a coma that my wife waits a year or so. That would be my hope. After a year, honey, I want you to be happy. If there's somebody else that can give you children and make you happy, God bless you. Go for it. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Steve is on the Lower East Side. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I wanted to talk about New York politics. What I heard on the news, it was today that Angelo Giuliani is going to run for governor. The only problem I have is he doesn't really have a track record, Frank. And you know as well as I mean, Dave, again, like they said, Trump didn't have one, but Trump was managing, tremendous real estate. So, and you know as well as I do, especially in politics in New York, you got 20 million people in New York. You really, especially as a Republican, he's going to run against these Democrats, and they're dripping with credentials, and we all know they're all imbeciles to begin with. But, I mean, it's just going to be very hard for him. I think Donald Trump's son would have a better chance, in my opinion, because at least he's running the Trump enterprises right now. But I just feel he's going to run into a lot of opposition because he doesn't have that track record. You know, as well as I do, most people that run for now Cuomo, yeah, he was Attorney General, and that, in my opinion, that doesn't qualify you for governor either. You should have some sort of a managerial experience because you got to manage all these different departments, and you also got to manage the purse strings, with the budget. So
yeah.
I think, you know, if he ran for maybe like Assembly or Senate, get some.
Right.
Some,
I don't disagree with you, Steve. I think that that Andrew, I don't know if you heard what I said before, but I think he'd be better off running for Congress in a place like the Hudson Valley or Long Island, a place that's currently occupied by a Democrat that has voted Republican before. And then this way he could kind of prove to the GOP and to donors and to voters across the state that he's got some crossover appeal. I think that's where I would advise him to go. I mean, not that, he takes advice from me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Yeah, he should have some sort of a track record because, as well as I do, the Democrats are just going to, even if he ran for candidate, that's what they're going to say. Oh, he's got no proven track record.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, look at Hillary. She was dripping with credentials, but she was a lousy senator. And she was a lousy secretary of state, in my opinion, she has no credentials.
And thank you for the call, Steve. It's so interesting, the three people that you cited, the four people you cited. You mentioned four candidates there, Steve. Giuliani, Trump, Clinton, and Cuomo. All of those candidates had the most important thing in politics in terms of electability, and that's name recognition. There's a reason candidates spend millions of dollars on TV and radio commercials and campaign literature. That's to buy name recognition. Clinton, Cuomo, Giuliani. Hillary had name recognition because she was the first lady and because she was the president's wife. Andrew Giuliani has name recognition because of his father. Same of Trump Jr. So you do have an edge once you have that name recognition. For instance, you notice Tom Reed, his candidacy for governor, he's dropped out now. But Congressman Tom Reed, his candidacy went nowhere. You know why? Because the fact of the matter is nobody knew who he was. And that's the same reason that I think Curtis Sliwa has the potential to do very well in the mayor's race. Hey, you know what we're going to do in a second? 15 seconds of fame. You can be heard on any subject for 15 seconds. Just call in 1-800-848-9222. Be heard on any subject. Let's be heard on anything and everything. 800-848-9222. You want to ask a question? You can. You want to tell a joke? You can. You want to put in a plug for Andrew Giuliani for governor? You can. Whatever the case may be. 1-800-848-9222. I'll tell you what I did yesterday. It was great. I went to a Zoom wedding. It was wonderful. I didn't have to drive anywhere. I didn't have to get dressed up. I just watched it on my computer. That is one aspect of post-pandemic life that I am hoping continues. Love these Zoom weddings. All right, let's be heard for 15 seconds. 800-848-9222. We're not screening the calls for content. Whatever you want to say, that's on you, because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
1-800-848-9222. E. Frank in Astoria, hello.
All hail the chief. Oh, poor Joe Biden. He's passing dead wall, dead end legislation that we're dropping dead right now.
Thank you, E. Frank. Tom in the Bronx, hello.
Yeah, I'd like to say that in Atlanta, Georgia, what they should do is to put on the best of the minor league teams in lieu of not having the other big teams.
That's not bad. Neil on Staten Island, hello.
Who are you kidding, Frank? A stud like you? Even Julietta want a piece of the Frankster.
I don't think so. Thank you, Neil. Mike in West Palm Beach. Hello.
Frank, like other callers this morning, always a great show, man. I'll tell you. But I'm going to switch gears. I like talk radio. Sidney Rosenbaum, or Rosenberg's friend, Craigie Carton. How was that guy still on the air with sports, with Ponzi scheme? He's a fast-talking piece of garbage.
Thank you, Mike. My view is he went to prison, he paid his debt to society, and he should have every right to earn a living. And if people don't want to listen to him because of what he's done, that's on them. 800-848-9222. Larry is on Long Island. Hello, Larry.
Hey, it's Russell.
Oh, well, are you sure? Because a lot of people are saying it's Larry.
No, Russell, there's only one Russell of White Plains, and if my wife was a vegetable, it'd be terrific. I could have sex whenever I want with her. Thanks.
Oh, that is really sick. Anybody that would say that is a grade A sickola. Sydney is in the Bronx. Hello.
Sydney from the Bronx?
Yeah, go ahead, Sydney.
Good morning, New Yorkers. I just want to give a shout-out to the New Yorkers to please wake up and let's vote for Curtis Sliwa for mayor.
Thank you, Sydney. 800-848-9222. Eddie is in Nassau. Hello.
No Biden Parmesan carpet for you.
Thank you. Tim on Long Island. Hello.
Sizzle moron.
There you go. 800-848-9222. Scott in Miami, Florida. Hello.
If you want to know who and why controls Washington, D.C., Wall Street, the Federal Reserve, the media, Hollywood, Las Vegas, AIPAC, etc., read the protocols of the learned elders of Zion which is a Jewish plot to control the world.
There you go. Thank you, Scott. I do wonder, do you ever just get tired of spouting hatred towards Jews? I guess not. 800-848-9222. We'll squeeze in a couple of more. Just bear with us if you're calling in. We have a new phone screener we're breaking in today, so it's taking some time. If you don't get through on the phone lines today, you can email me. Just email me at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Frank Morano. Elizabeth in Queens, you've got 15 seconds.
Good morning. I just want to say go Giuliani, G for governor. Go, go, go. He's a powerful and we all need this opportunity for New York to recover.
Thank you, Elizabeth. 800-848-9222. Danny in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello.
Hello, how are you? Listen, I just want to add in there for Andrew Giuliani. I saw him on a recent television show. He was being interviewed, and I want to say I was very impressed. He was articulate. He was up on the questions and the answers he gave. And, yes, I think he does have a future here. You know, in politics.
Well, thank you, Danny. Look, I've met Andrew Giuliani a number of times. I've always been very impressed with him. He strikes me not only as a very smart man, but a very nice guy, actually. And the two don't always go hand in hand. So I like Andrew. Is he ready for the top job in the state? I don't know that he is. So we'll see what happens. I guess only time will tell. Time is something that, unfortunately, we are out of. Everybody that didn't get through today, call back tomorrow. Tomorrow, my very special guest will be legendary former WABC program director John Minnelli. I have some other tricks up my sleeve tomorrow as well. Marlena Shivo will be here. We'll also talk cigars and a number of other issues. And if you want to stay in touch, find me on Facebook, facebook.com/MoranoFan. We're closing in on 4,000 fans. So if you want to be part of our little Facebook army, go to facebook.com/MoranoFan. Juliette Huddy and I will bring you the news next. To be continued.